Well, it's 9:31. It's called order. Ms. Malice, would you please take roll for us?
Yes, Dr. Stenhouse.
Here.
Dr. Davis Wilson. Dr. Davey.
Present.
Ms. Stinson.
Present.
Dr. Rates.
Present.
We have a quorum.
All right, great. Thank you. And thank you, board staff. We had some substantial cases this month, and for putting those together and also just, helping us walk through all this. Ms. Galvin, all the advice, the sage advice, legal advice you give us, much appreciated, and obviously always much needed. And then also my fellow committee members, thanks for being here and Happy New Year, everybody. So next point I want to discuss is a continuing ed credit. I'm just going to read a statement. The Board of Psychologist Examiners is approved by the BACB as an ACE continuing education provider. Attending a meeting of the board's committee on behavior analysts is eligible for continuing education credit for maintenance of BACB certification, Arizona State licensure. To claim this credit, make note of the code words provided hourly throughout the meeting. To report the code words to board staff for purposes of earning continuing ed credit, look for the link at the board's meetings page for this particular meeting. I am going to skip over agenda item number 4. We're going to move on to agenda item number 5. This up. Okay, so agenda item number 5 deals with discussion, consideration, and possible action regarding complaints and recommendations to the board. Please note that a person or representative of a person who has filed or is a subject of a complaint and is present today may make a brief statement up to 5 minutes to the committee when prompted by me. The committee may also have questions for the complainant or respondent after their statement. Only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, we'll make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance today, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representative may unmute themselves at that time. Please note that individuals in attendance who speak out without committee approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter the meeting. Please only use initials for patients or children and the complaint. Be aware that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. The committee may go into executive session to discuss any confidential records or to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Gene Galvin. For those in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based on parties present and request to speak. The first complaint scheduled for review today is number 23-15 against behavior analyst Pauline Brown. Before we proceed, are there any recusals for this case?
Mr. Chair, I do not have a recusal, but I do need to note that I have had a previous working relationship with a complainant. It has been almost 5 years ago. I've had no additional contact with this complainant, and I do feel as though I can move forward effectively.
All right, great. Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Dr. Davey, I too,
at one point in my career, had contact with a complainant. I did not directly supervise and have not had contact for probably close to 3 years, and feel that there's no conflict of interest there.
Okay, great. Thank you, Dr. Davey. All right. So, Ms. Denton, you're the lead member for the complaint. Will you please provide the committee with an overview of this case?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The complainant brought forth a complaint against Ms. Brown, noting that she instructed her behavior technicians serving a patient on her caseload to engage in what we will call an inappropriate toileting protocol. This intervention was proposed to be unsanitary and not consented to by guardians. The complainant reports that the behavior technician on a case informed a trainer who then informed him of this protocol that was written for this young girl with autism. Additionally, the complainant goes on to assert that Ms. Brown did not describe or obtain consent for a socially significant intervention. Furthermore, It is asserted that Ms. Brown instructed behavior technicians under her direction to refrain from speaking with others about the intervention. There was copious amounts of documentation provided by the agency, which we very much appreciate, provided quite a bit of information. Whenever we look at this, the areas of concern fall under Arizona Revised Statute 322091, Section 120, particularly we're looking at providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a behavior analyst that are unprofessional by current standards of practice, as well as 12DD under that same statute, which is violating an ethical standard adopted by the board. When we look at those ethical standards, we're looking at the Behavior Analyst Certification Board's Ethical Compliance Code, and those ethical standards would be 2.16 and 2.11. That would be describing behavior change interventions before implementation, as well as obtaining informed consent. I have reviewed all of the evidence, all of the substantial evidence. This includes approximately 8 months of session notes, over 800 pages detailing the delivery of those ABA services by behavior technicians and board certified behavior analysts. I have reviewed the complaint by JP. I have reviewed the reply by Ms. Brown, as well as the treatment plan, the initial treatment plan that was submitted, the initial assessment. Going through all of this information, as I've mentioned before, I very much appreciate all of the information that was provided by the agency to surround this. With this, Ms. Brown denies that denies all allegations, noting that she has never used any of the materials that were mentioned in the complaint during this protocol. Ms. Brown also denies the allegation that she instructed members of the patient's clinical team to talk to or gain assistance from others in the same clinic of practice. In her response to the allegations, Ms. Brown notes overall that there was no protocol developed, written, or recommended to this particular client. When reviewing the patient's therapy session notes, the treatment plan, the diagnostic reports, there is considerably little information provided concerning the intervention of note. The only evidence of this intervention potentially occurring can be found on one session note from July 28th of 2022, in which there are details of a behavior technician blocking and redirecting the patient from engaging in a particular behavior. There is no mention of the intervention described by the complainant. This is overall kind of a review of what I have seen. I do have some questions. Is now the right time to ask these, Mr. Chair?
Well, let's have a statement by the complainant and also Ms. Brown, her attorney, and then maybe we can open up for questions at that point. Does that work for you, Ms. Denton?
That works absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. And I noted on the screen that it appears that the complainant JP is present. If that's the correct person, please unmute yourself and state your initials only for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee may have questions for you following your statement.
I am JP. I'm present. I really don't have anything beyond what was submitted already for the current situation.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Ms. Dent, do you have any questions right now at this point for JP? Or
I think it might be beneficial to hear if there's a statement from Ms. Brown as well, okay. And then I could direct both of those if that would be acceptable.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So, Ms. Brown, you and your attorney are here, if I know correctly. If so, please unmute yourselves and state your full names for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes. The committee, as you've heard, will probably have questions for you, Ms. Brown, following your statement. So please feel free to discuss this time.
Good morning. This is Sarah Stark. I'm counsel for Pauline Brown.
Hi, my name is Pauline Brown.
And I will briefly make a statement and then turn it back over to the committee members for any questions you may have. So the allegations contained in this complaint are outrageous and categorically false. As Ms. Denton noted, hundreds of pages of patient records were produced in this matter, and not one contains reference to this alleged protocol or corroborates any of these allegations. In addition, none of the allegations were ever mentioned or raised with Ms. Brown during the time she was employed at this facility. Finally, as we've indicated in our response, Ms. Brown denies these allegations, and we would ask that the committee dismiss this complaint. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Brown?
I am open to any questions.
Yeah, and sorry, Ms. Brown is available to answer any questions the committee members may have.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Stern.
Sorry about that.
All right. Ms. Denton, you've indicated you have some questions.
I do. I do. I have a question for the complainant, JP. Whenever you were receiving information about this proposed or this alleged protocol, did your technician report how long this procedure had been in place? Did they give you any information surrounding the duration of this intervention?
We were informed that it had been in place for some time, and the information had been passed from behavior tech to behavior tech. The actual duration of the program is not essentially known, but it was in, how long did you say? We don't really have a concrete time, but there is some considerable duration for the intervention as far as it was reported by the technicians.
My next question, and I'm trying to maintain a certain level of dignity here surrounding the sensitive nature of this complaint. There was some discussion of some materials that were used during this intervention. Was there any location of these materials identified? Were they found?
The materials were found and turned over to Glendale Police. Also, other programs or all the other patients, we looked through their caseloads and make sure that it wasn't in place for any of those, and we found two others. I think the implementation of the others was a different variation than for the patient we're discussing. But there was evidence that was found and was turned over to Glendale Police.
When reviewing the session notes, there were several technicians across these 8 months who served this patient. Whenever you discussed this potential intervention, you know, I did see the notes in there that the agency did go in and, you know, do their best to ensure that this intervention was not in place for any of the clients or patients that were outside of the individual who was being discussed. Was there agreement between technicians on this proposed intervention? From what I was gathering, it appeared there was one person.
There was one person who was currently working or is still currently working for the agency who was implementing the program as instructed. With talking with other technicians who worked with the patient, there was, kind of dissension is the correct word, but there was disagreement in implementation of the program. As with the technician that brought it forward, many were uncomfortable with it and refused to implement it. But it was never brought to anyone in leadership for assistance until the named technician brought it to the trainer's attention, and then we dealt with the intervention.
Okay. Thank you so much for answering those questions. I greatly appreciate it. Ms. Brown, I'd like to kind of shift over to you for a second. Oh, sorry, Dr. Davey. You're muted, Dr. Davey.
Question for you, Mr. Chair. In terms of order, do you want to go and speak to Ms. Brown now, or do we want to answer a question, the complaint, and ask questions of the complainant altogether and then go back? I'm fine either way. I had some questions as well for.
If you have questions for the complainant, I can certainly withhold my questions for Ms. Brown until after that point.
Dr. Davey, please. Yeah, please do.
Is that appropriate, Ms. Galvin and Mr. Chair?
That is appropriate, but there are two individuals in the JP's frame. Who is the other one, please?
Hi, my name is Matt. I'm the regional supervisor at Hope Ridge at this agency. I worked with JP when he initially reported it, so I do have some kind of experience with the reporting process.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, JP. To echo what Ms. Denton has stated, a pretty substantial amount of information that was provided from the agency, from session notes to employment notes to other records. But, within all of those records, just not a lot of information with regard to the allegation. And so my questions, I guess, maybe more for the individual sitting next to you of what was the process for the internal investigation within the agency in terms of risk and compliance and governance? Were those RBTs interviewed? Were those interviews recorded in any way? To Ms. Denton's point, was there collaboration between those RBTs? And I'll pause there, but I have several other follow-up questions with regard to that.
Okay. So for your initial question, it was kind of what was the follow-up with the RBTs once the incident was known? Make sure I understand your question. I would have to double check for sure, but we gave it over to our HR department and kind of our internal one to review and to kind of handle it through the kind of their methods too internally. I don't know exactly what the outcomes of those ones were, but we did turn it over to our HR department and our internal department to go ahead and review and everything.
Dr. Davey, can I chime in on that one?
Yes, go ahead.
This is for either JP or Matt, but how long ago approximately, or if you have the exact date, were these allegations submitted to the HR department?
These would have been submitted around the first to second week of October. I want to say around the 11th.
And then have they completed their investigation?
I would think so. I would hope so. I would hope so.
Okay. All right. And then Dr. Davey, go ahead. I've got another question, but it's outside of this line.
I'll just admit, like maybe somewhere in the 900 pages, I missed it. But did we receive findings from HR on that? No, we did not. We found not all of a sudden eligible for rehire documentation, correct? So I guess my question would be back to the Hope Ridge officials of why that would not be included, given the seriousness of this report and what findings were found there. That is something that definitely could shed some light into what's actually going on and what was actually stated by the RBTs. It seems odd that that was not, maybe we didn't make the direct request of that in the subpoena, but you would think the HR team would put that together, that that's what this was about, and share that information. That aside, and I guess we'll follow up on that at a separate point, the RBTs that were supervised, were they all only assigned to the licensee, or were they supervised by multiple LBAs within your site at any given time?
There were multiple.
I think at the time they were only supervised by her. That was before we really switched pods.
Excuse me, can you please identify yourself? Who's on?
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Go ahead.
JP and Matt, who else is in the room with you during this?
We have one more over there that we can't fit into the frame. She is another BCBA that is she's the head BCBA at this particular center.
She's the clinical director here.
Can you please provide her initials?
Olivia Shaw.
Initials.
Oh, sorry.
OS.
Thank you. Dr. Davey.
Matt, what was your last initial, just so we have it
for you? Al.
So according to, I would guess that's your, I don't know Hopebridge's terminology, but that's your clinical director for the site in Glendale. And her statement is that the RBTs involved were only supervised by Ms. Brown. They were not supervised by any other BCBAs during this period.
Yeah, that's, we can double check to make sure that it is the case, but that's what we recall from that time.
Okay. Next question kind of folds into this, and it's actually, I guess, fortuitous that your center director is there. A standard practice, I would assume, at the centers is to be on the floor, be walking around, seeing what's going on, checking mm-hmm. out a protocol. You have a supervising BCBA who's over the, or LBA who's over the top of other LBAs that are then over the top of RBTs in some sort of hierarchy. During the, like, in what appears to be the suggested duration of these protocols, how is it possible that that would be missed by multiple staff in your facility? To me, that seems, again, having pretty good background on operations of center-based services, seems pretty extraordinary.
Yeah. I don't know how it was necessarily missed with it. I know with the with the internal structure of it, I know that the staff should have reported it sooner but didn't. I don't know if there's any kind of stuff from Paulina's side about kind of keeping it under wraps or with them not sharing it with us. So I don't know how it was particularly missed in that case. Situation, I wish I had a better answer for you.
That makes very little sense to me for RBTs mm-hmm. who have the same ethical code that extends to the BCBA ethical code that would not say to keep something under wraps. I mean, that to me just does not square up with me as a potential possibility that everybody's keeping something hush-hush. That I don't see anything in your documentation that suggests that. I have a couple other questions. At what point in the timeline was it decided to involve Glendale Police?
I believe that was the same day or the next day. The turning it over to the police was about within 24 to 48 hours with collecting the information, finding out what we could about it, and then making the determination to give it to the police. So about 24 to 48 hours.
And what's the status of that at this point?
Did we get any updates?
I haven't been informed of anything. Dr. Davey, my experience is in mental health and very much dealing with abuse and neglect, things like that. And so my desire was to follow that protocol. And when something came to light of a patient under my care supposedly being abused or neglected, I wanted to let those in the proper, realm deal with that situation. And so we turned it over to the Glendale Police, being that it was an individual outside of the patient's home, and also included the Department of Child Safety as well to assure that the child was safe.
Very good.
So just to clarify, you also submitted to Child Protective Services.
Yes.
In that same time frame that is provided by ML.
Yes.
Okay.
I think I'll pause there and see if other committee members have additional questions for JD.
Are there any questions for JP?
I don't have any additional questions. Many of my questions were already asked by my fellow committee members. Just to clarify your last statement. So are you saying that you have not heard back from either Child Protective Services or the Glendale Police on what you've submitted back in October?
No. Yeah, we have not.
And then just of note, too, and my fellow committee members can ask this, but why is there no record in the documentation we got of either the submission to the Glendale Police or Child Protective Services?
Sure. I don't know why that would not have been included with the documents that they that you guys were sent over.
Any further questions for JP, ML, or OS? Ms. Den, would you like to talk with Ms. Brown or ask questions of her this time?
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I'm sure there will be some follow-up questions from other committee members as well. Ms. Brown, whenever I was reviewing that initial treatment plan, I'm trying to kind of understand if indeed this was something that technicians were instructed to do, or if this was potentially something that a technician was confused about. I'm certainly not sure given the amount of information that has been provided. However, when I was reviewing that initial assessment and that plan of care that came from December of 2021, it was noted that the patient is in fact toilet trained. Is this accurate?
That's accurate.
And Ms. Denton, I'm sorry to interject. This is the first that we've heard that there was any complaint made with the Glendale Police or with CPS. So I'm going to have to limit my client's statements at this point because there are other pending open investigations that we are just now being made aware of.
Thank you. With the complaint, and with your response that came forth, there was discussion of other toileting protocols for other clients that used an auditory stimulus during toileting programs. Is this something that was ever used, this auditory stimulus, with the patient at hand?
I'm sorry, can you give us just a second?
Yeah.
Okay, hold on one second. Okay, thank you.
Ms. Denton, can you please repeat the question?
Absolutely. In your reply that was formed by you as well as your attorney, you had noted that for other patients that there had been some toileting protocols that included an auditory stimulus, particularly dropping water into a toilet to create that sound. And to encourage the use of the toilet. Had this type of protocol been used with the patient at hand?
No, the patient was toilet trained.
Was there any toileting protocol in place for this client at any point from December 2021 until the time of your departure from the agency?
No, the patient was toilet trained.
So I'm going to ask just another time, just for clarification. Was there any type of toileting routine? Was there any type of concerns with hygiene in the restroom for the individual after, for example, a bowel movement? Would you like me to repeat the question?
No, there was no concern.
Do any of my fellow committee members have any questions?
Dr. Davey, I believe you're muted.
Oh, I was not muted. I was politely raising my hand because I couldn't find
a way
to raise my hand.
Dr. Davey.
Ms. Brown, thank you for being here today to answer questions with regard to this complaint. Ms. Denton already asked a line of questioning. I was interested in knowing with regard to toilet training protocols, and then your attorney answered the other question of whether or not you were aware of the turning over of information to local authorities as well as a state agency, because I, again, 900 pages into the documents, did not recall seeing any of those things. And so I was going to ask that, but I think you've made it clear that you're were not aware of those areas. I too reviewed the assessment report. I noted that toilet training had been identified, and then noted that it had been crossed out and discontinued because she was actually the individual child had gained independence around toileting. And I think that that's documented here. I think I'm just going to ask the question. The complaint in your response from your attorney, you categorically deny that this that there was any sort of secret protocol with regard to toilet training or with regard to hygiene. I have yet to see anything in the notes that suggests there was. And so, you know, as I sit here in trying to adjudicate this matter, my question is with regard to toilet training in general and toileting schedules within the center, just for my understanding, like, can you provide us some information with, you know, what is it, something that's routine based? Is it something that children are independent, can independently request and then use? Are there children's bathrooms versus adult bathrooms? Can you just kind of give us a lay of the land of the center and the practice, if you will?
Yes, there are multiple restrooms across the area, and she was able to disclose if she wanted to go potty. She was fully potty trained, so she can request to go potty.
And in terms of just in general for children that are in the care of that center, those that are not independent, is there a schedule? Is there ways that they can request through ACCs? Like, what does that look like as a general approach?
Well, as a general approach, there is a schedule, but in regards to this specific case, she was able to independently request to go use the restroom.
Yeah. I might have missed it. Are there employee restrooms as well as client restrooms, and they're separated?
No, they're not separated. Everybody uses every restroom that's available to anybody in the clinic.
And with regard to just center size, while you were there and this client was in your care, to the best of your recollection, how many BCBAs would be in the facility with you on a given day? How many RBTs would be at the facility on a given day?
I would say about 6 BCBAs and RBTs everywhere in the clinic. There's over 40 RBTs, I believe, in the clinic. Everybody just, there's schedules of rotation, so we're everywhere.
Thank you, Mr. and Mr. Chair.
Are there any other questions from committee members? The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note that deliberation is the time for committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from the complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Ms. Den, would you please begin the deliberations?
I will, Mr. Chair. Given all of the information that we have and kind of the new information that came forth today, I am ultimately left wanting for more information. I'm certainly not sure about where we can go with that. You know, if there were complaints made to the Department of Child Safety, if there was a police report filed with the Glendale Police Department, I would very much like to see the results of their findings of the investigations that occurred at that point. I feel quite unprepared to make a recommendation, honestly. There, you know, there is very little information about this. The information that is contained within the complaint and within the reply, within the treatment plan, within the session notes, I believe is quite conflicting. Whenever it comes to what was recommended, what was reported, what was in the session notes, I'm certainly interested to hear from my fellow committee members if they feel as though there was sufficient information provided to come to a conclusion.
Other committee members.
I'm going to request to go to executive advice.
I will second that.
I'll second that, yeah.
Okay, all right. All in favor, say aye.
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 And that purpose is for legal advice, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Opposed? Okay, we'll move to executive session. Ms. Dend, further comments?
I think at this point I am ready to make a motion. Or direct board staff, if there is no other deliberations that are present.
All right. Committee members, any further discussion regarding that? All right, Ms. Denton.
At this point, what I would like to direct board staff to do is to issue a subpoena to the Glendale Police Department to gather more information about the report that has been done and the investigation that may be underway. I feel like this information is germane and incredibly relevant to either dismissing or confirming allegations. I would also like to see that there is a follow-up for additional information from Hopebridge, specifically pertaining to the results of any internal investigations. I'm not sure if we issued the subpoena to the wrong person. Perhaps that's information that we could gain from Hopebridge as far as who might be the best person. And we can certainly have board staff follow up outside of this meeting to get that information. To gather additional information surrounding, you know, the conversations that were had with those RBTs, if there was discussions surrounding those other individuals who were questioned, what the results of that was. Given these directions to board staff, I would like to propose and motion that we table this matter until that additional information can be found and reviewed.
I'll go ahead and
if I could add one more item, I would also be interested in Hopebridge providing any general protocols they have for toileting and hygiene for center-based, along with the other materials that are requested.
Anything further? Okay, so Ms. Galvin, do we need to make a motion?
I believe that was a motion for the staff to issue subpoenas to Hopebridge to obtain the documents that were discussed and to the Glendale Police Department. And Dr. Rates included the protocols regarding toileting and hygiene for center-based therapy.
Great. I just want to make sure that Dr. Rates got in.
And to table.
Okay, all right. Do I have a second on that?
I'll second.
Any further discussion?
I'll just make one point for those that are on the call and for the complainant as well as the licensee. You know, I realize that us moving this forward with more requests for information, you know, continues to add stress to all the stakeholders involved in this. We recognize that. However, for the sake of all the stakeholders and those that are in our care and are charged to protect the public, it's important that we see these documents to be able to make a very clear, concise, and supported decision.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Okay. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, thank you. And, from what Dr. Davey said too, we appreciate you all coming here. It helps clarify things. We do appreciate the time that you're putting into the year to kind of help with the process. So
And just to add, Mr. Chairman, once all information is received, this matter will be placed back on a future agenda and both parties will be notified.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next complaint scheduled for review today is number 23-07 against behavior analyst Michaela Eger. Dr. Davey, you are the lead member for this complaint. And just to make sure, are there any other recusals? Are there any recusals for this complaint? Okay. All right, Dr. Davey, would you please provide the committee with an overview?
Yes, on August 12th of 2022, board staff received a complaint from ND, which was filled with several allegations with regard to a Arizona licensed behavior analyst, Ms. Eger. Some background information. I mean, board has or company has materials, but just to point out some of the areas of particular distress in the complaint, you will see notice of individuals fraudulently billing. You will see the claim that individuals were perhaps physically, I won't say punished, but physically moved or restrained. There's also allegation with regard to the individual believing that there were multiple ethical violations with regard to dual relationships, with regard to not only dual relationships with staff, but also with parents. There was allegation of billing for services that were not conducted by the BCBA. There were allegations with regard to being paid for or being billing for one number of hours, but being paid for another number of hours. There was discussion with regard to back to the physical piece of QBS training being used inappropriately, perhaps. Really, the complainant laid out several, laid out information with regard to those areas. Importantly, I will note that there was no supporting documentation provided outside of the submitted written complaint. Ms. Marnette, the licensee, responded. Then we also have additional information that was brought into by the complaint that came from another party. I don't know if she's technically a part of this, but she has provided information and she has had a statement that I will, that staff will, or that committee will find on page 6, that essentially says that at this time, even though she's provided information, she does not know if Ms. Reed, the Arizona licensee, was a knowingly participant in any of the wrongdoing pertaining to her concerns at this time, and that she reserves the right to gather more information. And if she finds that there was issue, that she would be willing to lodge a complaint. But at this time, she has not become party to this complaint. With that, the licensee responded in a timely fashion and provided us information with regard to the complaints. She points out that she was an employee of the organization, was not had some leadership responsibilities, but was not an owner or manager, that she was not responsible for billing in the system, that there was a billing manager who was named in the complaint or named in the documentation that had ultimate control, that her level of control of Central Reach, the billing system, the electronic health record system, her permission levels were changed kind of the discussion around ethical billing increased with leadership at the organization. She responded to some of the questions with regard to the other party that is holding out filing a complaint at this time due to a lack of full knowledge of anything going wrong. And I believe there was There's also some information with regard to the timelines of how things kind of went down in terms of understanding of when billing was occurring and how the fraudulent billing was going through when she brought these concerns to her CEO and asked for more transparency around this. It was agreed upon that she would not resign from her position, but instead would be receiving reports with regard to how the billing was going out so that she could feel confident around her, around the practices. It appears that, you know, from the licensee that those were never received. The second part of this is the fact that we had an expired license, which the committee will remember that in a previous board meeting, we made the recommendation to the full board of psychology to go ahead and reinstate her license going forward, and that we would also discuss that issue as part of this complaint. There is a lot of information with regard to that she's provided us in the past, information with regard to misunderstanding of the particular renewal month and it not aligning with the BACB. There was also a substantial personal statement with regards going on to some happenings and some family matters that she had to attend to during a month and a half period of time, which also she could have played a part into not fully recognizing that her license had in fact expired. You know, she also reported that yes, until she became aware, she was practicing and that she had contacted the agency she was working with to inform them that they should not be billing for those services during this time. Once she became aware of her license being expired, she ceased seeing clients and adhered to the rules and guidelines as outlined by our statutes. I think that will be my summary at this time, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. And just to confirm, is ND, are you present today?
Mr. Chairman and committee members, ND indicated to me that she was unable to attend today's meeting.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to confirm that. All right. Okay, Ms. Eager, I know that you and counsel are present. If so, please unmute yourselves and state your full names for the record. This is your opportunity to make a brief statement up to 5 minutes, and the committee may have further questions for you and your attorney. So please go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Sarah Stark. I'm counsel for Michael Eager.
And I'm Michael Eager.
And I will just make a brief statement, and then Ms. Eager will be available for any questions the committee members may have. Can I go ahead and go, Mr. Chair? Okay, thank you.
Yes, please do.
Okay, thank you. As has been noted in the summary, this complaint contains numerous allegations. I will not discuss each allegation in detail due to time constraints and because we attempted to address these allegations in detail in our written response. However, as a general matter, I will say that a majority of these allegations are completely false and without merit. With regard to the insurance billing allegation, Ms. Eager denies that she had any prior knowledge of fraudulent billing practices. And in fact, she consulted with KB, who is the other party that has been involved that was named previously, and an attorney to report the suspicious behavior. She personally contacted multiple insurance companies to report these suspicions. She has yet to receive any follow-up correspondence from the insurance companies related to this reporting. With regard to Ms. Eager practicing on an expired license, she has admitted this occurred and takes full responsibility for this error. Upon realizing her license was expired, Ms. Eager immediately stopped working, contacted the board and her employer to determine what steps to take to remedy the situation. She has also now reported this incident to the BACB. Ms. Eager acknowledges the seriousness of this mistake and has learned a difficult lesson in this process. We would respectfully ask the committee members to dismiss the majority of the unsubstantiated complaints or allegations in the complaint, but Ms. Eager is willing to accept responsibility for unknowingly practicing on an expired license. She's willing to do whatever is necessary to ensure the committee and the board that she will not make this mistake again. And again, Ms. Eager is here and available to answer any questions the committee members may have. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Stark. Okay, so any questions for Ms. Eager or Ms. Stark at this time?
Mr. Chair, I guess I'll go ahead and get started. So there are, I guess I'll start with a simple question. Are you aware of any ongoing investigation for fraudulent billing under your NPI number or under any of the services you've provided by the insurance companies named in the complaint? That includes MercyCare, which is a subsidiary of Aetna, and then Blue Cross Blue Shield of Arizona?
No.
Have you been contacted by either of those entities with regard to any of your billing practices and the time frame of this complaint?
Only as a return phone call for the messages that I left for the original complaint.
So to be clear, besides the original complaint that came, that you filed, there's been no other contact by those entities back to you?
No.
I'm going to go ahead and ask for legal advice. I'm going to go to executive session and ask for legal advice.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I will second that.
Thank you, Ms. Denton. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor for executive session, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. We'll move to, all right, for Davey.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Eager. So I think I'll start with some questions just with regard to some of the statements you made and with regard to some of the statements made also by the complainant. I know you read the complaint prior to doing your response with your attorney. With regard to some of the discussions around sessions being billed for with clients absent or client absences, sessions being billed for at a BCBA level when an RBT was providing said services. In particular, in the complaint, there is a quote that the complainant was informed that there was a higher rate for a BCBA student if they wrote it out versus a non-BCBA student. Can you kind of walk us through kind of the process while you were at this organization with regard to, as a session's kind of going through, what the session note process looks like, what the session note signature process looks like within Central Reach? I think many of us on the committee are familiar with Central Reach. We understand there's auditing features and abilities to move things within calendars, and there's abilities to have different types of notes. But if you could give us your understanding of how that worked while you were at Rosewood, I would appreciate it.
So the appointments were made by our billing administrator, and the technicians were responsible for taking the data and finalizing their notes and submitting them for conversion. The billing administrator converted all of my appointments, and she was responsible for removing any clients that were not there that day, as well as removing clients that weren't there for the technicians. It wasn't very likely that technicians wrote notes on clients that they didn't serve, because they were usually put with a different client because we were always shorthanded. So they always did their notes on the clients that they served. I did notes for the clients that I served. The signatures happen within Central Reach, and it locks down the therapy notes. So I'm not sure. I don't know what she's talking about, that I had her do notes on somebody she didn't serve.
And it, just as your response reads, is it today, as you are here before the committee, that you did, is it your statement that you did not knowingly engage in fraudulent billing?
I did not.
And for the processes that you were in charge of, again, going back to kind of the central reach piece of like you open up your calendar, you see you're working with said client today, you go into that client's information. Sounds like you also had some protocols attached on one of the other modules from central reach, and you would essentially run those, or the BTs would run those. They would capture data, and then they would essentially sign off on that session. Is that a fair capture of what the process was?
Yes.
And then as the BCB overseeing that, did you also sign on any of those notes as a secondary signer?
No. Only when I was overseeing them.
In terms of billing practices, there's a billing manager that's mentioned several times throughout the complaint. You also mentioned it in your response. This individual had, I guess you tell me, what level of access to Central Reach did this individual have?
She was the master of all Central Reach. She had all of the permissions.
Mm-hmm. When you were going in and working with one of the other parties named, not the complainant in this case, there was several, both you and the other individual wrote about an interaction you had where you were on the phone after you had left the organization, where she was toggling through her schedule and going back and finding things that appeared to not be correct several months going past. Will you, for the committee's sake, just kind of walk us through, to the best of your recollection, that conversation and what you guys were looking at on the screens and how and what you found?
So that was just before I resigned, and I had come in on a Monday morning, August 1st, and I realized that I can no longer see KB's schedule on my screen. And so Central Reach is glitchy. So I tried to reconnect myself to her, but she didn't come up in the system at all. So I called her and asked her if she could see her schedule, because I was concerned with prior activities that they may have hidden her schedule from my view and replaced appointments that I took off of her schedule because she was not performing those services. So I called her, and she didn't know how to look at her schedule. So I walked her through how to look at her schedule, and she did not see appointments for that immediate week, but I had her toggle back through previous weeks, and her schedule was full even during times when she was in Alaska. So I told her that I would like to consult an attorney and decide how to move forward from there.
With regard to that conversation and with the other individual, I believe there's a statement in the individual from the third party that has provided some information with regard to when you were looking at the information on the screen, you were able to see who had created and entered appointments, correct?
Correct. And so you can go in to see who the originator of the appointment is in a certain screen. And so I had her pull up that screen, that particular place in the program, so that we could see who originated the appointment. And it was the billing administrator.
And for those appointments, were there notes attached to those appointments?
I don't know.
With regard to your resignation, the timing of that, there's some question brought up by the third party with regard to you requesting her holding off on going forward with her allegations and alerting the fraud departments of the insurance company. Can you give us some more information around that? You know, what your thought process was there, and provide us with why that third party may have taken that as maybe less than truthful.
The reason I did that is because it had been my experience that as soon as you resign from the company, even if you put in a 2-week notice, they would lock you out of the system. And so I wanted to gather as much information and consult the attorney before they locked us out of the system.
Uh, I think I'll pause there and see if other committee members have additional questions.
Any questions from Ms. Eager? Dr. Davey, do you have any further questions?
Just one other thing. I'm wondering if I realize that this may not be your area of that you may not have all the information of, and that's fine if you don't. But there's a information that you provide with regard to the complainant that at one point during her tenure that essentially she for some particular reason moved off of like direct service and went into more of a modified work schedule and admin tasks. I would ask the complainant this question, but can you just give us some information around or what you know around that particular event?
She had some severe health issues. And so we had to modify her schedule to accommodate medical appointments.
And while working from home, what sort of, what sort of tasks were assigned? I think it believed it said there was more admin tasks that she could be doing while working remotely. Are we aware of what those tasks may be?
Yes. And actually, I think I may have misspoken. That was one of the problems she had, and we modified her schedule for that. But she did have, she had an administrative adjustment because she had a verbal altercation with another staff member. And so she had some disciplinary time where she did perform central reach tasks from home, entering programs that we were going to be using for the kiddos.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions?
Oh, I guess since the second part of this is about the reinstatement of the license, correct, Mr. Chair?
Yes, that's correct. Okay.
I understand that we met about a month ago to go over your reinstatement that was put in place. With regard to the reinstatement, walk us through the circumstances that led to you missing on renewing, and then walk us through what your actions were with regard to that. Because I think one of the things the committee looks for is, we want to see that there was actions that were in the right direction once there was a misstep.
So I was certified in August and needed to renew my certification in August. I had for some reason, misguided notion that my license was also renewed in August. I changed my email in January of last year, January of last year, to reflect my married name. I was getting married the following March. So the email, I made adjustments and missed informing the board. That was an oversight. When I went to renew my certification on August 3rd, I entered all my CEUs, and then I went to the board to renew my license and found that it was expired. So I took the rest of the day off because I was at work already, and immediately emailed Krishna and told her that I had made a mistake in thinking that my license renewed in August instead of the month of my birthday, which was April. So I waited for her response, took the rest of the week off. There was no clinic the following week, so I knew that I had at least a week and a half before I needed to worry about serving clients and figure out what needed to happen next. When Krishna got back to me, she told me what steps needed to be taken. I informed my employer that my license had expired and when it had expired, and that the insurance companies needed to be notified. And she told me to let her notify them. And I told her that it was my responsibility to make sure they knew. So she would need to carbon me on any interactions so that I knew that it was taken care of. I put in the 2-week notice. I was concerned that they would continue billing on my license because they were billing without my knowledge. So I put in my notice and she told me not to contact any employees or parents, locked me out of the system and kept me on the payroll until the end of my 2 weeks. I followed the steps Krishna gave me to renew my license and did not continue working during that time.
And I'll just note I think I left it off my summary that in terms of the timeline, the complaint was received prior to the licensee informing the board. In terms of the timeline after, I believe it was a couple of weeks, Ms. Michelson, after the we were alerted to the practicing without a license.
It was three days after the complaint was received. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions from committee members? Okay. The committee will now begin their deliberation. Please note the deliberation is the time for the committee members to deliberate the case among themselves without interruptions from complainants, licensees, or attorneys representing licensees. Dr. Dave, would you please begin the deliberations?
I think I'll start with the license, expired license. We've seen an increase in these issues, those on this committee of people misaligning dates, missing dates for whatever reason, mailing addresses not being updated. And I would just encourage, the students on the phone that, that is something that needs to be adhered to. And it does not mean that the committee is going to show compassion when there are extenuating circumstances. I believe that some of the information provided by the licensee with regard to her personal life and the events that were going on during that time probably played a part in, in her misalignment of those dates. I don't think that's a full excuse, but I do see that that's a possibility. I do appreciate the action she took once she recognized it and identifying where she may have been practicing without a license and her efforts to not practice until the matter was put forward to the committee and then to the full board for renewal. With regard to the insurance fraud allegations, I struggle with having a complaint in front of me that makes several allegations and not being able to speak to the complainant about said allegations. I struggle with not having information from the insurance companies that were alerted to fraud, that they have not been back in contact with the licensee, and I'm assuming not the complainant, as I would assume she would have shared that information via email, which was her standard mode of communication with board staff. Loaded onto the fact that there's a practice manager, that we have two of the three parties essentially coordinating that they are creating the appointments, at least some of the appointments in question. It really leads me to this one, that there's just a lack of information and evidence with regard to those fraudulent billing complaints. I will say that the information that is provided from the complaint, and it is disturbing as you read through it about fraudulent billing. But again, there's very little documentation that's been provided. There's no information from the insurance companies with regard to a fraudulent billing investigation. And so it's hard to, essentially square those two up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion from committee members? I wonder if one of the possible directions would be to have the I'll hold off on that one there. Just one moment. I'm just wondering if we could have Ms. Eager, if there is any further investigation from the insurance companies, that there would be a notification of the board that that did occur. Dr. Davey, would you be comfortable with that?
Yeah, I think if Ms. Stark, her attorney, and Ms. Eager will agree that if there is information that comes to light or contact that comes to light from the insurance companies with regard to an investigation, that they would notify board staff of that information so that we could obtain that information and act upon it if necessary.
Mr. Chair, sorry to interject. I noticed that Ms. Stark was probably ejected from the meeting due to connectivity issues. I'm not sure she heard everything relative to the point that was just discussed. So you may want to revisit that.
Ms. Stark, I suggested that get with the insurance issue that if there is further information regarding an investigation, that would be reported to the board staff. Okay.
Yes, thank you very much. Sorry about that. We're having internet issues in our area, apparently.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Dr. Davey, anything further or any further comments from committee members?
I think the only question I'd really have is, since we have kind of the license issue, the practicing without a license issue, as well as kind of the insurance fraud issues, is I do think that a non-disciplinary letter of concern is warranted with regard to the practicing without a license. There were like I said, there were extenuating circumstances that were outlined, however our rules are clear and that needs to be adhered to. And so I would probably, if I had to split the two, I'd probably move for a motion of that non-disciplinary letter of concern with regard to her expired, we're working on her expired license. And then if I take the second part of this with regard to the insurance fraud claims, that I would most likely make a motion to dismiss those due to a lack of evidence at this time. And I'd like to reserve my right to receive future evidence from Ms. Stark and her client.
And Dr. Davey, would the letter of concern also include an address ensuring that all contact information is updated within the required time frame?
Yes. Thank you, Ms. Michaels.
Dr. Davey, are you proposing that as your motion?
I guess I would ask Ms. Galvin if it's okay if we split those two, because one will be a letter of concern and one will be make a motion for dismissal. I feel as if we haven't heard from the other committee members, so maybe we'll see if they...
If there's a lack of consensus, we would split them up. But I think it would be appropriate and sufficient if you want to make one motion, the letter of concern for the practicing without a license, all other allegations would be dismissed for lack of evidence. And the letter of concern would be for also failure to keep her information, contact information updated with the board.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin.
Dr. Davey, is that your motion?
Ms. Galvin has said my motion in a very concise and succinct fashion. So
thank you. Thank you, Ms. Galvin. Do we have a second on that?
I'll second.
Okay, any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, Ms. Michelson, would you let Ms. Eager and Ms. Stark kind of know what's happening next? And...
Yes, Mr. Chairman. So the committee's recommendation to issue a letter of concern will be reviewed by the board at their meeting next week on Friday the 13th. So I will provide them with the information to participate in that meeting.
All right. And Ms. Eager and Ms. Stark, as I mentioned earlier to the previous complaint, appreciated you both being here to help represent what happened. And it definitely gives us much more information and sturdier information to make decisions on. So thank you for being here.
Thank you. We'll see you next week.
All right. Okay. Let's have the CE word given. We're almost a half hour past when we should have, but Ms. Malice, would you provide us with that, with the word for that?
Yes, I will, Mr. Chair. The code word is governor. Governor. Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, could we take a comfort break? We need to bring Dr. Davis Wilson into the meeting, and board staff needs to perform a little bit of file management. So we need a few moments to do that, if you don't mind.
Yes. Would 11 reconvene at 11:10 work?
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. All right.
And Mr. Chair, just maybe we can make prioritize some of them from their license.
Yeah. Thank you, Dr. Davis. Are all committee members here? Dr. Rates, Dr. Davis Wilson, Ms. Denton, Dr. Davy, Dr. Davy, have you returned? Dr. Davy? Let's see. Well, I think we have quorum, and so we'll go ahead and move on. I'm going to start addressing people that are on the call. And
Dr. Davy has appeared.
I see, Dr. Davy. Thank you. Thanks, Ms. Galvin. Okay, so we're moving on to discussion regarding the recommendation of the board for approval of behavior analyst applications. The first application we will address is Abigail Nolasco-Galvin. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The applicant comes to us today for review, received their board certification in October of 2022. They received a master's in special education from ASU in May of 2021. In reviewing supervision, all supervision occurred at Ascend Behavior Partners under multiple supervisors, but did have a Julie Hickerson, who signed off on all supervision. Supervision occurred between January of 21 through June of 22 for a total of 1,783 hours. In reviewing the supervisors, they all met the requirements for supervision, and I did not note anything of concern for this applicant. Would recommend we move forward.
All right, thank you. Next application is Jocelyn Bennett. Ms. Bennett, you're the lead on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Bennett passed her board exam on May 31st of 2017. She received her degrees from National University, specifically a Master's of Special Education in January of 2015, and also received her certificate in ABA in 2017. Her supervision ranged from May of 2015 until June of 2016. She accrued over 1,530 hours, all in the state of California, which does not require licensure. At this point, I did not note any concerns with the application and would recommend that it moves forward to the full board for review and approval.
Sorry. And just to confirm, I'm looking at page 11 of the PDF. And I believe it's, page 11 of the PDF. And just to confirm, the copy I have, and maybe there was another copy that was loaded, that number 12 on the...
it's just blank.
Yeah. So I didn't know if that needed...
So we would need... Yeah, we would need that information. Nice catch, Dr. Stenhoff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Jocelyn. What information was it? I'm sorry, so I can make sure to get that as soon as possible.
So on the supervised work experience form that's put out by the State of Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners, your form that was completed by Corrine Pilkington. Number 12 on the application, there was no response to either yes or no on that. And so that would just need to be finished.
Okay. I will double check on that right now. I know there was some back and forth with her sending documents. I thought that she had completed that, but I will double check and get that sent in as soon as possible.
Okay. And then as far as moving forward, Ms. Denton, if we in fact get that from Ms. Pinkleton, will that be okay? Okay.
Yes. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. All right. Okay, so let's look at the next. We'll move on to next application is Lily Ha. Dr. Davey, you are the lead on that one. Oh, Dr. Davey, I think you're muted.
I've just been talking to myself. I said, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I believe that the applicant is on the call, Ms. Ha. Thank you for being here today. I'll have a couple of questions that hopefully you can help us sort through. Ms. Ha comes forth for licensure in the state of Arizona. She's been a board certified behavior analyst since 2019. She also holds licensure in the state of Texas. She completed her application in its entirety. Question 12, she did note that she did have an incident back in 1991 while in college. She explains that incident, and since that time, there have been no other issues. And so, given the time frame and the information that's provided, no real questions about that. Appreciate the documentation. She's graduated from the University of Cincinnati, where she studied education and from the College of Education, and subject area was foundations and behavior analysis. Provide some information with regard to her supervised experiences. We have a list of Elizabeth Horton as someone who provided said experience. Most of her experience appears to have been done in Texas. We have information from her multiple supervisors. The total to, like, the first document has about 1,407 and a half of the hours that were accrued at Behavior Frontiers. The five supervisors were all licensed in the state of Texas at the time of her supervision, as well as they were in good standing with the BACB and completed their supervision training. For the second individual, we have, I got to toggle to that name as I get past all the Texas licenses here. Ashley Behrman, who provided another 156 hours of supervision, also explains that she had to answer no to a few of the questions on the application just due to the fact that this was remote work. I believe the statement is, I only supervised Lily for a brief period of time for a mix of individual and group sessions. I did not during this time observe her with clients or staff, as it was not a requirement for the board. I can only speak to her indirect work. Thank you. and have finished the application as such. Ms. Bierman is certified, as I said, or certified by the BCBA in good standing, has her her module completed on the ability to supervise, lists that she has a license in the state of Ohio. And so, Ms. Hall, the reason I asked that perhaps she could be here just to answer some questions, my question is really this: for those 156 hours Ms. Bierman supervised you for, were those for clients you were seeing in Texas or for clients in Ohio?
Good morning. No, it was for case studies and article reviews and assignments that we assigned.
Okay, so just to be clear, no clients were involved. It was all indirect, if you will, supervision activities.
Yes.
Okay, and that's kind of what I wanted to make sure of, Mr. Chair, just because those hours would have required Ms. Ashley Bierman to also, if it had been in Texas, for her to be licensed in Texas versus in Ohio. But given Ms. Ha's explanation that those were indirect and related to non-face-to-face or non-client activities, I have no, I would just move that this go forward to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Davey. And Ms. Ha, thank you for being here. The brevity of your questions were in fact there, but the issue is, though, is if you wouldn't have been here, I think there would have been a different outcome, or at least we'd need further information from you. So thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much, everybody. Can I get off?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay. All bye. Right.
Bye. Okay, we're moving on to application number 14, Daniela Gentile. Let's see, Dr. Davey, you're the lead on that.
Thank you. And did I miss, did we skip my first one as well? Because I was MIA. Mr. Garcia, did you?
I don't know if he's on the call. Is Mr.
Garcia? Oh, no, I see. Oh, we're going through the people.
Yeah, sorry, yeah.
I'm the one that suggested that, so you think I'd remember.
It was a great idea, Dr. Davey.
Thank you. I can't remember from 1 minute to the next. All right. Thank you very much. Let's get this one pulled up. All right. Ms. Gentile comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, became a board-certified behavior analyst back in November of 2022, completed her application where she lists Arizona State University as the college she attended, earning a degree in the Master's of Arts in Special Education and Applied Behavior Analysis. Her subject area was Special Education Concentration, ABA. She completed her questions, completed her coursework at two Arizona agencies under two Arizona licensed behavior analysts. Supervisors completed their paper, or there's multiple supervisors listed, one group accounting for just over 1,100 hours, and one of the individuals on that signing off as the person knowledgeable of her experience. All supervisors were in compliance with our rules and regulations. Next group of supervisors, also the same thing. Everyone was in compliance with rules and regulations. Two of them, one signing off on knowledge of that, another 380 hours. I believe that this application can move forward for approval as well.
And board staff, I need your advice on this too. On page 2 of the PDF, Ms. Gentile wrote that Donald Stenhoff was her advisor, and knowing Donald Stenhoff fairly well, he does not work for that department at ASU, and so I don't know if that needs to be changed or not.
Yeah, you're definitely not the major advisor. So what you're saying is that you're not the major advisor?
Not at this time, no. So. Okay. Or nor was I at the point of Ms. Gentile's program.
She's here. Can we get her to just update on who that should be listed as?
Get that.
Ms. Gentile, you're there.
Hi. So when I had reached out, they had, I was unaware of who it was, that lead of the program, and they had actually told me that it was you, Donald Stenhoff. So my apologies.
Oh, no, you're fine. Yeah. I need to get a paycheck from them, I guess, since I'm doing this work now. So,
but I am more than happy to reach out again and correct that information.
Well, I think you'd be okay if you put Sam DeGangi. That might be, he's the VCS person there. So you're, and it's, you can do Sam or Samuel. I think the board staff would be happy with either one. And then DeGangi is, I think, DIGINGI, something like that. If somebody knows better, let me know.
Okay. And then do I just resubmit it through the same email?
Board staff, how is that done?
Mr. Chair, we would, I think, just accept an email with an attachment.
To the same email that I sent my application through. Okay, fantastic. I will get that done right now. Thank you. Okay.
All right. Thanks, Ms. Gentile, for being here too. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Contact your employer there, Dr. Stenhoff. See why they're just throwing your name out everywhere.
Especially if it's a completely different college, but that's okay. So. All right, so let's look at the next one. Shane Mannion, and I'm the lead on that one. And I noted Mr. Mannion is here as well. But Mr. Mannion responded to a second formal additional information request. The FAIR requested documentation of supervision training be submitted by Jennifer Desay, which was received by the board office in an updated application form, specifically using page 6 to update his supervision information. Received by the board office. Of note, Ms. Desay submitted supervised work experience verification. She marked no for number 4, indicating her supervision activities did not occur at least every 2 weeks. I wanted to kind of tap into my fellow committee members and note, you know, ask whether that's a concern. And Mr. Mannion, maybe you could address why that was for further information.
Hi. Yeah. So Jennifer Desai was actually my supervisor after I became a behavior analyst. So that's why it probably wasn't every 2 weeks because it was kind of variable.
Okay.
When I was gaining my hours prior to becoming a behavior analyst, it was at a minimum of every 2 weeks.
Okay.
I know additional paperwork was needed because my original supervisor, she marked a one box of no because she wasn't really 100% sure. It was the one on supervising or training other staff and managing performance. Where I worked at that time, I didn't really do much of the managing performance part. And so they asked for additional information. So that's when I reached out to Jen, who was my supervisor the first like year and a half when I first passed my boards, to provide that extra paperwork.
Okay. And committee members, any concerns with that issue at all?
Mr. Chair, I think if the hours are going to work, if the hours are going to count toward the required 1500, then they still have to meet the requirements set forth in the BACB experience standards. I think the post-certification supervision would still have to meet this the same because the hours still have to meet all of those. Now, having said that, the current standards do not require the once every 2 weeks. It's worded very different now. And so I think that this is probably, you know, a future agenda item. But the old standards were once every 2 weeks. The new standards are that you have the patient contacts per month. And so those can happen in the first week of the month. Those can happen in the third week of the month. There's not a requirement anymore. And I believe our rules say that, that we will accept that of which is, current with the BACB standards. Now, I guess the question then would be, did those contacts happen at the rate in which the BACB requires? And that would be that the supervisor
had a client contact. I believe it's once in the non-concentrated and twice. And those are client contacts. That doesn't include the supervisor contacts, which are at a higher amount. But the client contacts would be the equivalent of those observations, and they're no longer defined by every 2 weeks. I know that just muddied exactly what you're asking, but.
No, I think it's helpful. So would you, Dr. Davis Wilson, would you contend that these hours would be acceptable then or no?
I would say that we would need more information from the supervisor to verify that the new standards have been met. Okay. So the supervisor would need to say, yes, I observed, or we had client contacts at this dosage.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I don't think it needs to be the every 2 weeks, but there is a standard for how many times a month you must have that.
Okay. All right. So given that, I think we probably need to, unfortunately, request additional information from the supervisor. Board staff, can you make a note of that so we can request clarity on you know, client contact and the frequency of that as well?
Okay. Can I speak?
Yeah, Mr. Mannion.
So I did reach out to Jen. She actually doesn't work at the company that I originally got those supervision hours from. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of difficult because she had a lot of like schedules that were like blocks. So like some of them were like 4-hour blocks where she was reviewing my information or my care plans or something like that. So it was just hard to determine exactly how many hours each one was directly with me because they were blocks. Mm-hmm. So I basically got this printout of a year and a half of all the contacts that we had. Mm-hmm. And I updated this on the last paperwork that I had sent. But there was well over like 80 hours or something like that. Mm-hmm. But some of them weren't determined exactly how, because they were block schedules. Does that make sense?
It does.
So I did have Jen fill out that, but the ones that were very specific was what I sent. You know what I mean? Because it was well over that, but it was just hard to determine because they were blocks.
Mr. Chair, if I may, the issue isn't the hours. It's the requirement of the observation with a client. And so in the old standard, the requirements were that you were observed engaging in behavior analytic activities at least once every 2 weeks. The new requirements, and I just did pull them up, is indeed that you were observed with a client once per supervision period, and a supervision period is per month. So what we would need from the supervisor in order for those hours to count is documentation that says, yes, she indeed observed you with a client once per month for each one of those months.
Are you, just a quick question, are you just referring to Jennifer, who was my supervisor after I became a behavior analyst, or do I need any additional information from my original supervisor to gain my, because I had well over 1500 hours before taking my boards? I just want to clarify who I would need more information from.
So the issue is what hours you're counting toward the 1500 to meet the statute requirement to be licensed.
Okay.
So, regardless of whether you were certified or not, the statute requirement of that 15 hours must align with the BACB requirements. And so even if you had a portion of your supervision that you used towards BACB certification, and BACB said, yeah, these are fine, and we're saying, well, we can't accept them, so you need to submit some additional documentation or what have you, that additional documentation still has to meet those same standards, which would include that observation.
Okay. So to piggyback on the last paperwork that I had sent from Jen, you would need more specific overlapping with me with clients per month. Is that right? For each individual month?
Yes, she would need to provide justification that she did indeed, or provide us with an attestation that she did indeed observe you with a client at least once per month during that time period.
And does she need those specific dates, times, all of that, everything so specific? Or is it just more of like, during the time that she did supervise me, she's just stating that she did supervise me with a client during those months?
I will defer that to the committee. I'm okay with an attestation. I think in the past we've taken supervisor attestations for similar types of things. I think that if she wants to provide more information, that might be in your favor, being that now this is, you know, another time that we're kicking it back. So the more information she's willing to try to provide, that's fine. But the information is quite specific to that one standard, and that is that one standard of one observed contact per supervision period.
Okay. Now she, so I actually worked with that company, and I transferred to a different location in the company in Colorado because I started in Florida. Now, do you think I should reach out to who supervised me in Colorado as additional information for after I left Florida?
I mean, that's up to you. I think it's however you want to get the hours that meet the standard. Yeah. So if that means that the standard would be better met through another supervisor, keeping in mind that the other supervisor would have had to supervise you under all of the standards as well. So this particular supervisor is just saying, hey, I didn't do the observation once every 2 weeks. But she has attested to everything else. So all of the other components of the requirement have been met. If you do bring in other supervision, you just want to make sure that they meet all of the, you know, requirements set forth by the BACB.
Yep. Okay. So I'll reach out to Jennifer then. I mean, I've been a behavior analyst for 4 years. So I've been mentored for 4 years with other people overseeing me. I'll reach out to Jen and just get her. Does she just write it up like in an email and email it to the board? Or is there a specific form that she needs to fill out?
I believe board staff that just an email from her does need to be from her, verified from her.
Okay.
Outlining the nature of those contacts.
Okay.
Yes, that is correct. So we'll accept it directly from the primary source. And forgive me, committee, for, you know, raising this question, and it's entirely your discretion. But if what you're requesting, if you feel that there's really no potential for ambiguity here, would the committee consider or entertain receipt of this material for purposes of, you know, putting on the board meeting agenda next week? Of course, we would assign Dr. Davey or Dr. Davis Wilson to be a lead on that matter and discern, you know, whether the contents were sufficient and appropriate to complete the application file. I'm just raising that as a possibility. Again, you may consider it, dismiss it, but that would prevent this application from, you know, appearing on another CBA agenda February 2nd, I believe, or February 3rd, and then the subsequent board meeting agenda on February 10th. So I'm just looking for a possible shortcut here, if you think it's appropriate at all.
I'd be happy if that could happen. I'm sure my fellow committee members would, and Mr. Mannion, I'm sure, would be very happy about that as well. If that could happen, does anybody have any concerns with that?
I don't have any concerns. My only procedural question, I guess, would be if we're talking about the one supervisor sending the attestation, that's one thing. But if he's going to bring in additional supervisors' information, and that's going to be new information, procedurally, that would require it to kind of go back to the CBA, correct? I mean, like, I would imagine, or are we okay with seeing it as an individual agenda item next week and letting the full board review the new information? looks like either way would be fine. I would like, if we can get the information and see it next week, I would like that. I just wanted to make sure that we were clear on what information.
I think if they're, well, and I, you know, this is more for those of you on the board, but I think if there is an attestation from Ms. Desai, that'd be fine. And if there is clarity in another submission of the supervised work field experience form from the board, as long as it's clear and it meets those requirements that you described, Dr. Davis-Wilson, I think that'd be enough information. I believe for the both of you that are on the board. Is that accurate?
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, but I think, like, to your point, Dr. Davis-Wilson, it's like if the information is clear that's presented to us, then essentially you can just move forward with the recommendation that this be approved from the committee. And the committee could essentially say, listen, if that is cut and dry, then we can move forward with the recommendation of the full board. And then we don't have to adjudicate the whole matter in front of the board. We can just say information was received. Board gave us, you know, essentially the committee has already made the recommendation that if it met that criteria, that we could, you know, put it on the consent agenda, or not put it on the consent agenda, but move it, like, essentially approve it right there on the spot. Versus a full discussion of all the materials.
Okay. All right. So, Mr. Mannion, do you understand what's needed?
So, I mean, should I just reach out to Jen, have her fill out, or have her send over something stating that she did supervise me each month, and not bring in someone else just to make it extra work?
That's going to have to be a decision made by you.
Okay.
But if she is able to provide that, then again, it's up to you. But if she's able to provide it, I would say that that would be nice. So,
okay.
Dr. Davis-Wilson.
I was just going to say, I think the attestation needs to be specific, not just to supervise you each month, but that it meets the observation with a client each month.
Yep.
Because there's, you know, 6 million different ways that we can, you know, supervise. And I think that's the one piece that's missing, is that direct observation with a client.
Okay.
Okay. Any further comments on that? Okay. Mr. Mannion, has that been clarified?
Yes. Thank you.
Okay. All right. And thank you for being here too.
Thank you.
Much appreciated.
Okay, so I guess they'll just email me with an update after Jen submits all of that, if I need to do anything else.
Is that correct, board staff?
Yes, Mr. Mannion, we will notify you if we're presenting the file to the board on January 13th.
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, let's see here.
Dr. Smith, I have to step away for 1 second.
Okay, all right. Let's see here. Okay, so we're going to, we'll come back. All right, so let's pick up at application number 2, Candace Marrero. I need to disclose I was Ms. Marrero's instructor while she was completing her master's program. I don't know if anybody else has further comments on disclosures for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm actually recused from this item.
Oh, I do see that. Yeah, thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Okay, Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that.
Thank you very much. Candace Marrero completed her master's degree in May of 2021 with a Master's of Science and ABA from Arizona State University. Following her graduation, she passed her board exam in February of 2022 on 02-02-22. She received all of her supervision in the state of Arizona across multiple supervisors at multiple different sites for a total of 1,509 hours of supervision. Given all across all of the supervisors who are all licensed in the state of Arizona, who had all completed their supervision requirements, as far as the 8 hours of supervision training before they provided supervision, all documentation provided did not raise any concerns for me. And I would recommend that it moves forward to the board.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Malice, note your hand, and I'm wondering if that has to do with the word.
Yes, I didn't want to interrupt Dr. Stenhoff. We can, if you want to finish that one, and then I can do the code word.
I think we're finished, so yeah, feel free.
Okay, the code word is Katie. It's Katie, K-A-T-I-E. Thank you.
All right. Okay, so next application we'll discuss is actually number one. Joel Garcia, Dr. Dave, you're the lead on that.
I'm sensing a theme in Ms. Malice's.
I'm noting that as well.
Quite the theme going on of the inauguration, all the excitement at the Capitol. Yes, so Mr. Garcia, is that who we are at, sir?
That is correct.
Very good. Thank you. Mr. Joel Garcia comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona, became a board certified behavior analyst in October of 2022, attended Arizona State University at the Teachers College as major subject was applied behavior analysis. Interestingly enough, did not list you as their major advisor. However, ABA Maroon advising team, I'm not sure what that is. So I had noted that, but I did not catch your signature on the other one. So do you have any insight for us on that, Dr. Stenhoff?
I do not. Apologize, but I have, no idea.
Okay. So board staff, we're probably going to have to ask what that is, like name of major advisor. I think that's a person, not a team, but again, if we could get some information around that, that'd be great. Other than that, the application is completed in its entirety. Application lists multiple supervisors that provided supervision. All are in compliance with our rules and regulations with regard to licensure, good standing at BACB, and 8 hours of supervision training prior to working with the candidate. So if we could just get kind of the information with regard to who the major advisor was cleaned up, then I'm all for moving this forward to the full board.
All right, thank you. Next application is Ryan Willis. I am the lead on that one. Ms. Willis received her BCBA certificate in November of 2022. She graduated in October of 2022 from NAU with a Master's of Education in Positive Behavior Support. She received 1,580.25 hours of supervision under an Arizona licensed behavior analyst. I didn't note any concerns with this application and recommend that it move forward to the board for approval. Next application is Dana Johnson. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yeah, so Ms. Johnson is applying for initial licensure. She passed her exam in August of 2019. She is licensed in good standing in Utah, both as a behavior analyst and as a teacher. She graduated from Capella University with a master's in ABA in 2018. And she did 1,500 hours of supervision in 2017-2018 in Utah with a licensed behavior analyst. That licensed behavior analyst was in good standing and eligible. I didn't realize I turned my camera off. Sorry. And eligible to supervise. So I do recommend that this applicant be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right. Thank you. Okay, next application is Jennifer Fitzpatrick. Dr. Davey, you're the lead.
Yes. Ms. Fitzpatrick comes forward seeking licensure in the state of Arizona. She is a board certified behavior analyst. She was first certified in February of 2016. Also holds an active Washington license. Completed her application in its entirety, noting that Ball State is where she received her master's degree in special education and applied behavior analysis. I'll just point out that her major advisor's name is Beth Hawk and listed appropriately for there. We've got good information provided in terms of completing the application. The question really comes in with regard to the last experience noted where she also received her supervised experience towards certification and licensure. Page 4 of the PDF for the committee lists a site name called ABA Unit in Virginia, Arlington, Virginia, with a supervisor of Melanie Ray. During that time for Virginia, Virginia enacted licensure in 2012 under the Board of Medicine. Would tend to think that, you know, at that 8/18/14 was the start date, that there would be a license in place for Ms. Ray. However, board staff has communicated back and forth via email, as you will note, asking if Ms. Ray was licensed in Virginia during the time of supervision. To date, we have not, and please correct me if I'm wrong, board staff, but as of this meeting, we have not received additional information with regard to whether or not Ms. Ray was licensed in Virginia at the time of that supervision, correct?
That is correct, Dr. Baby. That email from December 6th is the last email between the applicant and myself.
Okay, thank you for that. And so there has been, we did ask for additional information around that. And so I do think it's important that we continue probably information for our request for additional information with regard to that license. What we did find is that Ms. Ray is still a BCBA in good standing. She does hold, we could not find her in the current Virginia data bank, but that could be because she's let it expire and has potentially moved. And so we probably just need some additional information either from Ms. Ray or from the applicant to be able to move this forward with regard to her supervised experience.
Thank you, Dr. Davey.
So Ms. Moss, are we good to what we would like more information on? I think you were already on it when you were trying to get her to respond to some of your emails.
Yes, I understand.
Okay. Thank you very much. And we could find, again, with grandfathering and, you know, we don't have the full timeline of when the initial first license was printed from Virginia, but 2-year gap there. And maybe that's what we find in the request for additional information, but I feel it's prudent to find out.
Thanks, Dr. Davey. Next application is Kinda Eden. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on that one.
Yes, thank you. I'm just organizing my materials. So the applicant comes forward today, received their BCBA in October of 2022, completed their master's degree at ASU in special education in the summer of 2021. They did have multiple supervisors through Hope Bridge between February of 21 and June of 22 for well over the 1500 requirement. In reviewing the application, I didn't see anything of concern and would recommend it move forward.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Next application is Catherine Lanto. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're the lead on that.
Yes. So Ms. Lanto is applying for initial licensure as a behavior analyst. She passed her exam in November of 2022. She did complete the ASU online program in May of 2022. She did her supervision from December of, I have 2030 on my notes, but we know that's not true, of 2020 through October of 2022. And she, that was done under a licensed behavior analyst in good standing. I did not note any concerns with the application, and I do recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
All right, thank you. Next application is Alexandra Zachary. Dr. Rates.
Yes. So this applicant comes forward, received their BCBA in October of 2020, completed their master's degree at Columbia in August of 2019. Supervision did occur between February of 19 and June of 2020 for a total of 1,524 hours. The individual did have two supervisors in two different states. One would be for hours in California, and there are no concerns there. The question I have for my fellow committee members that I couldn't quite determine on my own is the supervision that occurred in New York. So I am not seeing additional licensure information. When I looked at the BACB website, it does show that there was licensure previous to when this supervision took place, but curious if my fellow committee members have more information around the timelines for that. This would be page 10 of the application for the 169 hours.
And Mr. Chair, committee members, just to, I'm not sure this informs the committee all that much, but our research reflects that New York did require licensure effective July 1, 2014. So that's the date we need to be mindful of.
I do have a question on this, and perhaps Dr. Davey, you're aware of it. I actually think we've seen an applicant before the board years ago. I do believe that their statute has an exclusion for licensure for certain school programs, specifically like preschool programs. And I don't know that their licensing requirements require, like how ours require that your hours must be done by a licensed behavior analyst. I don't think that, I'm not sure that New York's does. And so if that school, which I think we'd still need additional information, but if that school and that BCBA employed under that school falls under that exclusion, then perhaps that would be why it didn't occur. And perhaps we could consider that. I don't know that we have enough information to make that decision today, but I do know that in New York, there was a really strange, like, and it was related to early intervention programs and IDEA Part C, I think. So I think that if my memory is serving me correctly.
Yeah, I know there were exclusions, but I can't offer any conjecture at this point. Probably best to get some additional information, let the applicant let us know what's going on, and kind of go from there.
The other possibility is that they have additional hours that were done in California, that it was only for the 169 hours. So perhaps we can give that as an option as well.
Absolutely.
Board staff,
other than that, everything else was looked good.
Okay. So board staff, was that all that noted?
Thank you.
Okay, next application is Yuseni Valapena. Dr. Davis Wilson, you have a lead on that.
Yeah, one second. Ms. Valapena passed her exam in December of 2021. She did complete a master's in education science in Cuba in 2010. She has supplied us with the documentation to show its equivalency for U.S. master's. She completed her ABA coursework from Spain in 2021 and has provided us the VCS verification documentation. Ms. Valapena did report that she completed 1,500 hours with the BCBA in Florida, where licensure was not required. However, she reports that occurred between September 30th of 2022 and August 18th of 2021, which I believe is a total of 10 months and 18 days. And in order to meet the requirements that are current with the maximum of 130 per month, that would take 11 and a half months minimum. So unless my math is wrong or I'm missing something, I do believe that we will need additional information on potential hours to meet the requirements, because she would have only been able to accrue a portion of that. I'm showing 1365, so it would fall just short of the 1500.
And you're coming up with, that was an eight month period, correct?
10 month and 18 days, so 10 and a half months.
And which, did you note September 1 is the start date?
I had September 30th, Where did I get September 30th?
So September 30th is noted on page 25.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, page 11 on the multiple supervisors field work from the BACB has a 9-1 start date, end of 4:30. So that's still only 8 months there. It's over in Arizona for that one. And then there's 5, that one goes to 22. So then the next field work, Dr. Davis-Wilson on 12 has dates from May 2021 through April 30th, or I'm sorry, of May 2021 through April of 2022. That's the 1,000-hour block. So those would run, do those run concurrent? No, because that would be the next one.
Yeah, I mean, there's a 1,500 noted on page 25. So, I mean, that's definitely under, I believe, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So, and then.
Dr. Davey, I'm not seeing the other experiences. Am I missing?
I'm only seeing the one experience.
Sorry, I was looking. Yeah, I was looking at something else. I apologize.
Okay. I think that it's still a little short at this time.
So we need additional information.
Yep, that would be my recommendation would be that we request additional information to see if there's additional hours or additional documentation that can be provided.
In next application, VNA Oros Zumudio. I need to disclose that I was her instructor while she was completing her master's program. And Ms. Denton, you're the lead on that one. And Dr. Davis-Wilson is recused from that application.
Thank you very much. This applicant passed her exam on September 24th of 2022 after graduating in May of 2022 with a master's in science in ABA. From Arizona State University. Her supervision ranged from September of 2020 until July of 2022. All supervision occurred in the state of Arizona. She accrued a total of 2,031 hours of supervision from numerous supervisors, all with their documentation included in the packet. Thank you, board staff. At Autism Spectrum Therapies, overall, the applicant appears to meet all of the requirements for licensure. I have no concerns with the application and the opportunity that it moves forward.
Okay, thank you. And then you're up again with Stephanie Real's application.
All right. Ms. Real passed her exam on November 19th of 2021. She graduated with a Master's of Arts in Elementary Education from Loyola Marymount University in May of 2017, and then subsequently received her graduate certificate in ABA from Arizona State University in December of 2019. Her supervision ranged from May of 2019 until September of 2021. She received 1,514.45 hours of supervision, all in the state of California, which does not require licensure. I did not note any concerns with this application either. I feel fortunate to have received such applications this time around. Don't have to dig very deep. These are all great applications. And I would recommend that it moves forward.
All right, thanks, Ms. Denton. Next application is Natalie Stevens. Dr. Rates, you're the lead.
Yes, thank you. Stevens comes forward for review. She's received her BCBA in November of 2022. She also indicated that she is licensed in the state of Utah in education and special education. She completed supervision or completed her master's in science with an emphasis in ABA at Utah State in May of 2022, and supervision occurred between October of 19, September of 22, for a total of 2,018 hours. She had two supervisors that were licensed and met all of our requirements. She did note that the supervisors were not affiliated to the school where she was working when she did her supervision experience. Apart from that, I didn't note anything additional with this application.
All right, thank you. Next application is Brittany Perkins. Dr. Davis, will you lead on that?
Yes, Ms. Perkins is applying for initial licensure behavior analysis. She passed her exam in November of 2022, graduated from ASU Online in August of 2022. She did complete just under 2,000 hours across multiple LBAs that were licensed in good standing and met supervision requirements from January of 2021 to August of 2022. Did not see any concerns with the application and recommend it be forwarded to the full board for approval.
Thank you. Next application is Allison Cazares. I'm the lead on that. Ms. Cazares received her BCBA certificate in August of 2022. She graduated in May of 2015 from St. Joseph's University with an MS in criminal justice and applied behavior analysis. She received 2,036 or 2,084.88 hours of supervision, supervision under Arizona licensed behavior analysts. The discrepancy being in the BCBA or the BACB's verification form compared to the multiple supervisors at one organization form from the board. But either way, she did surpass the 1,500 hours required. I noted that Ms. Cazares checked yes on number 12 of her application on page 2 related to two different DUI incidents. She provided the court records as well as an explanation. And due to the fact that the occurrences were over 8 years ago, there hasn't been any violations since. So I didn't know any other concerns with this application. Recommend that we move forward to the board for approval. And then moving down to requesting approval for telehealth registration is Megan Hollister, and I'm also the lead on that one. She's requesting approval for telehealth registration. According to the ARS 36-3606, there's regarding the requirements of the interstate telehealth services. Of note, they're required to provide a proof of health care provider's professional licensure, evidence of professional liability insurance coverage, and a designation of a duly appointed statutory agent for services of process in the state. Ms. Hollister completed and provided the required information. Thus, I did not know any concerns with this application and recommend it move forward to the board for approval. Right. So that is the end of the applications. Do I have a motion to move those that were listed as moving forward to the board for approval, except for those that were noted by board staff of having needing additional information?
So moved.
Do I have a second on that?
Well, I will second.
Thank you, Dr. Davey. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. And Ms. Moore, I just noted that you're on the call and I missed your name and the thing, so I'm sorry for the delay in getting to you. We were trying to get through some of these. But
I totally get it.
But so let's moving on to number 7, discussion on consideration, possible action regarding potential and license supervision provided by Chelsea Moore. Ms. Pakenham.
Yes, Mr. Chair. This matter is coming before the committee because it was noted that Ms. Moore was identified as having provided supervision for a former applicant, now a licensee, while the applicant's hours exceeded that which is required for licensure. Ms. Moore had provided over 400 hours of supervision according to the application, and the supervision occurred in the state of Arizona. However, Ms. Moore has never before, never at any point has never been licensed as a behavior analyst in the state of Arizona. And I do apologize for the obviously incorrect dates in the memorandum. We had attempted to review this matter at the last meeting, but of course, due to time and quorum constraints, we weren't able to. But all of the other facts in the materials are true and presented to you for your consideration. Ms. Moore has supplied a written explanation. We've exchanged some correspondence, and then she has also provided more of a narrative explanation, but she has been invited here to clarify anything the committee wishes to obtain from her and to address your questions. Do you have any questions for me?
I don't at this time. Committee members, any questions for Ms. Pakanon or Ms. Moore?
I mean, I guess the question with related to your explanation, Ms. Moore, is that that you were in fact supervising clients from July 2021 till August 2021, correct? As you were not, and at that point, you were not licensed as an Arizona licensed behavior analyst, correct? It was that month period?
That's correct. I was told that it was being billed under a licensed behavior analyst at that time when I moved over from the New Mexico region to the Arizona region. I was told that I could bill under a licensed behavior analyst as a mid-tier.
Yeah. And I would just, you know, for the sake of this conversation, like billing and practice are not necessarily completely aligned. So it may be that under whatever contract was out there that it did list that, you know, someone could do that. However, the statutes and rules in the state of Arizona are such that
absolutely,
an individual to practice needs to be licensed.
Totally understand that. I'm so sorry that it happened. I have a statement if you guys want to hear it. If not, I know I gave tons of evidence of my lack of knowledge and my ignorance to the situation that I should have been clear on.
In total, you know, during that time period from July to August, do you have an approximation of how many hours that actually equates to?
I really generally don't. I don't know. I mean, I would say on during that time, I was building up a caseload, so not many at all. I think I only had like 4 clients, and then I passed them over to another clinician when I moved up to my new role.
So 4 clients a day, maybe a couple hours, like a couple hours supervising them every single day?
It was probably about 10 hours a week total.
So,
yeah.
So we probably surpassed the kind of the grace hours that we have for someone. Okay. Who was the organization with Ms. Centria, correct?
That's correct, yeah. It might have been like 40 hours or so total, I'm assuming, because it was only like a month. That I supervised myself.
Yeah.
Were you supervised during that time?
I had my vice president, the area vice president, she did come and overlap, but she was not licensed in the state.
Sorry, Dr. Davey,
No, it was kind of the same question, like if there was any supervision by licensed behavior analysts that were over the top of her. Is this a, I mean, being there, is this a common practice? Like when this was explained to you that this is something that they had done in the past kind of thing, or like, what was
it's a very common practice in, Arizona. it's something that is kind of until someone is licensed in the state, they bring people on and you are labeled as a mid-tier and you have a caseload. And then you have, you're told that, you know, this is, you know, you're able to do this under billing, that you're not being billed as a behavior analyst, you're being billed as a mid-tier, and then it's being billed through as a licensed behavior analyst, and it never sat well with me. It didn't seem right. I was like, how could that be? Like, somebody has to oversee you in order for it to be correct, which is obviously why I left the company, because I didn't feel like the practice was correct.
Well, I appreciate the forthcomingness with this information. And I can imagine that it's stressful to have to sit here and talk to us about it, and then we made you wait forever. So that's Dr. Stenhoff, that he's mean about that. Others have any thoughts on this? I feel like
Mr. Chair, Dr. Davey, I have a lot of thoughts on it. I think, you know, Ms. Moore, thank you for sharing that. And I think that this is, I agree that this is something that it's something that I have brought to Access's attention as being a potential concern with the lack of the health plans properly monitoring the mid-tier program. We do have a mid-tier program in our Medicaid system, so it's absolutely the concept is allowable, but the concept still requires that supervision by a licensed behavior analyst. It's not intended to be a pass through while you're waiting for licensure, just do your thing and this is acceptable. And so I actually a couple of months ago brought it up in a provider meeting that I was concerned based on various responses that billing departments were giving to the health plans. I was concerned that perhaps this was something they needed to look further into. I don't know to what degree. Like, I am very concerned that there's a very large organization that we are licensing folks 3, 4, 5 at a time each month. And we're now being told that all of these individuals may have also been practicing without supervision. And it has kind of just been haven't caught it. I don't know. To what degree we have or need to as a committee look further. So that's, you know, my initial thoughts to the side, not today's agenda item, but definitely one we need to pursue. Today's agenda item is whether or not a statutory violation occurred. And the unfortunate part is that once that question is answered, the statute defines what we then can do. So it's not no longer like, we hear you, we understand you, thank you for your testimony, thank you for your documentation. Which please understand, yes, thank you for all of that. But now it goes into, but was there a statutory violation or not? And I think,
I believe that one of the supervisors that oversaw me during that time, she may have been licensed, but I don't know. Because I had a swap over of area vice presidents during that time. I don't, just to bring that up, like I believe that she was, because she's been with the company for a very long time. And I know that they have various people that are licensed or not. I just wish that it had been more clear as far as who was and who was not licensed, because she is in Michigan, not in the state of Arizona.
So Dr. Davis-Wilson, I think what you're saying is even with all the circumstances, the next step is most likely a complaint is open based that there was a practice without a license. And then we will gather the information. And as part of that, you know, maybe we have, we gather a pretty significant amount of information from the employer. I think we've got the information from Ms. Moore, and we can start the process there, which could be quite a long and tedious process. Not necessarily for you, Ms. Moore, but.
Well, and I would acknowledge, Dr. David, to that point, though, that because the complaint, you know, would have to be opened in her name, that, you know, it would drag this out for her. And that is unfortunate. And that's, you know, it's not something that. It's kind of a double-edged sword of it's not something that's enjoyable for us to have to do. But at the same time, it is the responsibility of the individual BCBA to know the rules and the regulations. And I agree with you. I think, you know, perhaps getting documentation from the employer would be the.
They refused to do anything when I reached out to them.
Well,
they refused to have anyone reach out and confirm anything on my behalf.
So then, Dr. Davy, I agree with you. I think the next step will be to open a complaint and perhaps subpoena some documentation from the.
Yeah, and what I meant by this, Ms. Moore, is if we get into this, you know, whatever comes of your particular case, like the additional complaints, this committee has the ability to recommend that additional complaints be brought forward and adjudicated. So to Ms. Wilson's point that this will be nerve-wracking for you for some period of time, but it's important that we get through this, because if this is, again, our major charge is that of protecting public safety, making sure those that are practicing behavior analysis in the state are following the rules and statutes determined by the state and the Arizona Board of Psychological Examiners. And that clearly is outlined for that mid-level behavior analysis trainee, that is a supervised, direct ongoing supervised, consistent with our standards. And so I think we appreciate the fact that you're so forthcoming with this information, which will help us move forward. And we will, you know, I think get through your matter hopefully quickly, and so you can turn the page.
So as far as I'm concerned, my certification is still kind of, and what's going to happen to me is still kind of up in the air. Is that correct? Because I did read, I just want to throw this out there, because I, you know, after like obviously getting this letter of concern, I've done ethical considerations. I've looked through everything. I checked everything with all of my uppers before I had done anything, which I obviously outlined. And as well as that, I did make sure that, you know, I was underneath of, I saw that there was like a temporary license of like under a certain number of hours you can provide. And I definitely would be under that. Would that change anything? Because it was just a 1 month period.
So, Mr. Chair, can I take a stab at that answer, maybe just from a procedural perspective?
Yes, please.
So when an individual is notified that they are the subject of a complaint, they have an opportunity to supply a response to that complaint, which can consist of, you know, whatever information the subject wishes to bring forward, that, you know, whatever facts, explain whatever circumstances, you know, exist. And so that is part of the investigative record. So, you know, we can't respond to, you know, in terms of supply us with this or don't supply us with that, or you should think about, you know, XYZ. That is a very open-ended invitation, if you will, to supply whatever you think is germane to the allegations, which the allegations are specified in the notice that a subject receives.
Yes, ma'am, I get that. I just wasn't able to, obviously, because I'd stopped working for the company previous to that, I wasn't able to get any documentation And I did ask for them to supply to me records of everything and who it was billed under. Because obviously once, you know, I submitted it on the system, I wasn't able to see anything further. And they stated that they would not supply me with anything.
And Mr. Chair, Ms. Moore, so maybe you heard some mention of it a few moments ago in the discussion. The board does have subpoena power, so that is an investigative tool that we can leverage. So we can complete a thorough investigation.
If the person above me was licensed in the state, that did oversee me, would that change any of the matter?
I can't answer that question, and I am not sure the committee could answer it in the absence of having, you know, all the facts and circumstances before them, the entire record. So that's a very difficult, if not impossible, question to sort of answer. It may not seem abstract, but yet it is.
Right. I totally can understand.
I'll just say, as a licensee in this, the board staff are here to support you, answer questions as this goes along. You know, you can reach out to, I'm sure Heidi's shaking her head, you can reach out to Ms. Packman and Ms. Malice, Heidi as well, and they will guide you through this to get us, you know, as Ms. Packman said, it's an open invitation to give us all the information you have, and so that we can adjudicate this matter in a fair and efficient manner, and then if needed, move beyond you and into looking at other situations that may come out of this information.
Okay. What do I need to do at this point?
Mr. Chair, so Ms. Moore, the committee is going to make a recommendation. The committee can't make the decision to, you know, move forward in any specific way. So a recommendation must be forwarded to the board. Whether the board considers that to its next meeting agenda or a future meeting agenda, we'll make that determination, you know, what is reasonable and practical, but you would be noticed of that. So you would have an opportunity to also attend the board meeting to hear that discussion.
Mr. Chair, if I may, can I make a motion to go into executive session for the purpose of legal advice?
Yeah, please.
So moved.
Okay. And second?
Second.
Yeah. All right. All in favor say aye.
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 All right. Move to executive session. All right. Any comments at this point or motions?
At this point, I think we, I would move to go ahead and open a complaint against Chelsea Moore.
All right. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay, all in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Right. For staff, could you let Ms. Moore what she might expect next?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So as I had sort of alluded to a little while ago, we do send a formal notice of a complaint opening. It's quite detailed. And it will explain, you know, procedurally what you know, what to expect from the complaint investigative process. So that is, you know, we field questions even after we send the notice. We field questions about the content all the time. So as the committee has indicated, you know, we're happy to address those. In terms of timing, I am not certain when that will happen. So we just sort of take a thoughtful approach to, you know, how we sort of prioritize the matters that we need to investigate. So if you don't hear from us, That simply means that we haven't determined that it's time to move forward with sending you the notice. So I'm sorry if that's a little bit vague, but that's what we can supply you with in terms of information right now. Thank you.
So in the meantime, I don't need to do anything. Just wait for a notice.
Right. Yeah.
And just one other question for board staff. She currently holds license, obviously. She's clear to continue to work and do the things she needs to be doing and go about her normal life as this goes through, correct?
Yes. That's correct.
Okay.
Correct. Ms. Moore, you are not in Arizona.
No, ma'am.
Okay.
And if I may, Ms. Moore, I know that this is jarring and it's tough, but none of this is intended to be a gotcha. It's not intended to be, you know, malice. Like we're here to kind of support the process. Board staff will support you, and just hang in there and we'll let the process, you know, play itself out.
I appreciate it. Thank you guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Ms. Mouse, would you mind sharing the next word?
Yes, Dr. Stenhoff, the next word is Hobbs, Hobbs, H-O-B-B-S. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, and I'm going to, I noticed Ms. Rosmos and I believe Ms. Smith is on the call, so I'm going to jump down to agenda item number 9, discussion consideration regarding reinstatement requests. So the first application for that is Madeline Rosmos, and Dr. Davis Wilson, do you agree on that?
Hi, yes, I'm here.
Thank you, Ms. Rosnos. I'll go ahead and provide a summary. Ms. Rosnos submitted her application to the board on December 15th of 2022, or her reinstatement application, I apologize. Her original application did expire on September 30th of 2022. Because it was within the 60 days, the board staff would have had the authority to accept the renewal. However, because Ms. Rosno did check yes to having practiced for the for 2 months, this has been boarded up for our review. The notice came around December 8th from Blue Cross Blue Shield, who is requesting an updated licensure status. Ms. Rosnos immediately noticed her error, contacted the board. Her employer also contacted the board. Her employer did provide a very thorough summary of what the organization did to remediate the issue with payers, to remediate the issue with their contracts, as well as their corrective action plan that as an employer, they are going to put into place to hope that this does not happen again. I do commend the employer for taking immediate steps and being transparent and forthcoming with that. Based on the information that we have today and kind of the last few meetings and the influx of information that we have received for the influx of these expired applications, I would, you know, recommend that we go ahead and reinstate the license and put on a future agenda item the discussion regarding the practice without a license.
Thank you. And then you also are the lead for the next application. For Jessica Smith, and I believe Jessica Smith is on the call.
I'm so sorry. Could I?
Oh, yeah, Ms. Rosman, sorry. Go
ahead. Yes, please.
So, what is, can you just summarize? I just want to know if you guys need anything from me or what the next steps are. I do have a statement prepared, and I'm happy to read through that as well.
Mr. Chair, if I may, you are welcome to read your statement. Because the agenda item today is just the reinstatement of the license, that's the only thing we're going to take action on today. And so that's going to be that we are recommending to the full board, so next week's meeting, that your license be reinstated. Because okay. You check yes to that question, we're going to also add a future agenda item to review the information related to the practicing without a license. When okay. They get that to the board meeting, they will notify you and you will have the opportunity to provide any additional information. Like I said, between you and your employer, you guys provided, you know, quite a bit, but you'll still have the opportunity to provide more. And then we'll invite you back here to go over, you know, kind of the details around the 2 months of practicing without a license.
Okay. But you are recommending reinstatement of the license as of right now.
Correct. And then that will be voted on for the full board next week.
Yeah. Okay.
And then board staff will contact you with the details for that reinstatement.
Okay, thank you very much. So there's nothing in the interim that I need to do right now.
Nope. You should be okay. Good. You're welcome to join us next week and they'll let you know the details.
Okay. That. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you for being here.
This is Farron Akins. I'm counsel for the licensee, and I appreciate that the clarification is helpful. So we'll simply stand by, be prepared to discuss this with the full board next week, and then from there, wait to be notified of returning to discuss the issue of practicing without a license with you at some point in the future. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Akins.
And Mr. Chair, if I may, I just wanted to make sure board staff were aware that Mr. Akins will be there next week because we did not also invite him to introduce himself or speak. So I just wanted to make sure that next week we got you. We got you, Dr. Akins.
Okay. Thanks a bunch.
Okay. Let's see. Dr. Davis Wilson, you're on again for Ms. Smith.
Yes, so Ms. Smith is she has also submitted her reinstatement application as of December 15th. Her license expired on November 30th of 2022. She was contacted about 7 days afterwards from her HR department at work asking for a copy of the updated license. She immediately realized her lapse and took immediate action. Upon submitting the application, she did have to answer yes to practicing for 7 days, or during that time between HR's contact and the lapse in the licensure. Similar to the other one, my recommendation would be the same, that we go ahead and refer to the full board recommendation for approval for reinstatement of the license, and then we add an agenda item to discuss the unlicensed practice.
Thank you, Dr. Davis Wilson. Ms. Smith, did you have any further comments? And do you understand where things are going next? I know it was explained in the previous application.
I think everything was explained. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. All right. We'll go ahead and move back to agenda item number 8, discussion consideration, possible action regarding reactivation request from Karen Peterson. Dr. Rates, you're the lead on that. And Dr. Davis Wilson, you're recused from that.
Yes. So, Ms. Peterson voluntarily placed her license on inactive status in November of 2020. Her license was in good standing. She is now looking to reactivate that license. The requirements that she had for that were 30 hours of continuing education, 4 of which were within ethics. She has submitted all of those requirements. In reviewing those continuing education, she did meet those requirements. Additionally, she provided a copy of her teaching license, which she also holds and is in good standing. In reviewing this application, I didn't see any issue and would recommend we move it forward.
Okay. And then let's take a vote on that. Or do we have a motion on that? Or since we're separate, so.
I can make a motion to move this forward to the full board.
Okay, thank you. And then have a second?
I'll second.
Okay, further discussion? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. I want to move back to agenda item number Dr. Davis Wilson, I was curious if you'd like to make a motion regarding those two reinstatements.
I certainly will. I move that we reinstate the licenses for Ms. Rosnos and Ms. Smith, or that we recommend to the full board the reinstatement of the licenses.
Okay, great. Thank you. And do we have a second?
I will second.
Okay. Any further discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Opposed? Okay, motion carries. All right, I'm going to move back up to agenda item number 4, approval of minutes. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes for December 2nd?
So moved.
Okay, do I have a second?
I have a second.
All right, thank you, Ms. Denton. Okay, any further discussion? All right, motion carry. Oh, let's vote first. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, motion carries. Okay, next agenda item number 10, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding election of 2023 committee chair, Ms. Pacanon.
Yes, Mr. Chair, as I noted in the memo, the committee's statutes require that there be an annual election for a committee chair. And so, however you want to lead or facilitate this process, you may do so. I suggest maybe starting with some nominations or self-nominations or something of that nature. And if we have a contested race, then we can decide the most efficient and effective way for the vote casting among the five of you to occur. I do want to note that Ms. Denton does need to leave at 1 o'clock, so that won't affect quorum, but I just call that out as a just to consider with respect to maybe moving this item forward before then.
Okay. Let's see what we can do. If we can do better than our federal house and get somebody voted in. Are there any nominations or self-nominations?
I mean, Dr. Senhoff, you're doing such a lovely job. However, I think I'm going to nominate Tisha Denton.
Tisha's wishing she had to leave at 12:30 now.
I know.
Do I need to accept said nomination?
You do.
That would be in order.
I will accept said nomination.
And I would add, Dr. Rates, if you're interested, you would also be a lovely candidate. I just know you're you're doing all the ACE provider stuff and the CEU stuff. And so I just didn't want to throw something too crazy. Yeah. And for those of you, I think we're all aware, Dr. Davey is taking over as chair of the full board. So I think
I am.
I hope so, because I'm not prepared next week.
I was not feeling good about a month ago, so I'm not really sure what happened. Plausible deniability. So we'll see. We'll see how next week goes.
And I would second the nomination for Ms. Denton as well.
Yeah. And just in light of this information, should this be carried forward, when would this transition occur?
Today.
For the meeting.
Yeah. Don't, and you already accepted
just
Ms.
don't
Denton.
Look at my face. Just
well,
I'm just standing in like the shadow of giants. I hope like everyone can acknowledge that for a hot second while I have this face.
Well, in view of the shortness till 1 o'clock, and I don't believe any other nominations are out, so can we go ahead and carry forward with the vote?
Yes, you may.
Okay. All right. Well, all in favor of Tisha taking over as chair, say aye.
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 Opposed? Okay. Motion carries. Congratulations, Ms. Den.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Or former, I don't know. I think I finish up the meeting, and then you're on next meeting time.
Chair emeritus.
There we go. I like that. So, congratulations, and we did it with 3 minutes to spare. So very nice.
Thank you.
Hey. All right. Next agenda item, discussion, consideration, possible action regarding proposed legislation, but not limited to folder number 674, Ms. Backenheim.
Dr. Sinoff, could we have just a mini break, perhaps? We've got, 3 items left, Ms. Backenheim, that are all yours?
Yeah.
And quick.
Oh, so should we just power through? Like quick as in, it's up to you guys.
Whatever is the committee's pleasure. I could go either way.
Dr. Davey, how much time do you need for the break?
I'm just going to go. I'll just be right back. Get started.
Okay. Ms. Packenham, go ahead.
Yes, he's not going to miss anything. So I did put this item on the agenda in the event prefiled legislation of interest would appear. And I've been obsessively checking throughout the morning, and there's really nothing yet to track. It's still very early. There are under 50 bills that have been prefiled. So just by way of explanation, folder 674 is the only nomenclature that exists right now for the bill that the board has requested. So that bill contains proposed revisions to the psychologist statutes only. So there's a series of revisions that the board is seeking, but none of those impact the behavior analyst statutes. So I will, of course, be looking for anything that would revise the statutes under this board's chapter specific to behavior analysis, and also looking for any other statutes that have sort of broader regulatory implications or impact, and also sort of agency operations kinds of legislation. So nothing to talk about this month, but I can assure you next month there will be a laundry list of bills that Ms. Denton will get to read off when she announces the agenda item.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Recent updates from the Behavior Analyst Certification Board, Ms. Backenheim.
Yes, Mr. Chair. So we did not have any discussion at the last meeting due to time and quorum constraints about any BACB updates, but just, you know, by way of a quick summary of those, the BACB notified regulators about prevailing in a lawsuit against an individual who was found to have harvested items from the examination. And then more recently, the BACB has alerted jurisdictions that there may be, this would be a state by state situation, but there may be efforts made by the speech language pathologist community to attempt to introduce restrictive language to Behavior Analysts Practice Act as it relates to speech-related services. Again, I've been tracking legislation and I've seen nothing of that kind or I've heard nothing of that kind. So that is maybe an FYI, and I'm sure something that AZ ABBA will be paying attention to as well. And then, of course, I think the most significant update that we received, you'll recall that the committee made a recommendation to the board to forward or make a referral to the BACB concerning a former supervisor for one of your applicants. The applicant is now a licensee, but the committee and board were concerned that the former supervisor, Maurice Salad, had really thwarted any attempts to supply the applicant with any documentation relative to her supervised experience, had in fact issued a cease and desist order to that person when she requested the documentation be submitted to this board on her behalf. So the referral was made by the board to the BACB. The investigation was conducted, and so the final adjudication was an educational memo. We do not know any of the facts and circumstances that sort of were considered in this process. We are not privy to that. We can assume there must have been other information that compelled the BACB to arrive at that determination. But I thought it was important that this come back to the committee to inform you and to kind of close the loop on that matter. Unfortunately, I don't have any other information to share other than the email that you have. But I can answer questions if you have any, or I'll attempt to anyway.
I would just say that the findings of the BACB, probably not shocking. I think, you know, it didn't go through the first level, which is a peer-to-peer coaching situation. It did go all the way up to the complaint side, it sounds like. And, you know, since it's essentially violation of responding to those in charge of a particular jurisdiction, I forget the language, that letter of concern is probably where that landed. But at least hopefully got her attention, and we'll see that error again.
We hope so.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to take this opportunity as a brief moment to excuse myself.
Bye, future Madam Chairman. All
right.
Gentlemen.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Okay, agenda item number 13. Discussion, consideration, possible action regarding ARS 32-2091. 03. Ms. Pacano?
Yes, Mr. Chair. So this item was assembly of maybe some other closely related subtopics, but this is sort of a topic that I know was requested specifically by Dr. Davey, but again, you know, other committee members have certainly spoke to this issue and raised this issue. So we are looking at the statute 32-2091 as it relates to the provision of supervised experience. I think we're still trying to resolve the question as to whether the committee and the board have the authority to get more granular in terms of collecting information about the specific role that supervisors supply to applicants. In other words, can our statutes enable us to require the applicant to supply for each supervisor how they functioned according to the supervision definitions and roles defined by the BACB. And I think there's also a question that, again, this was sort of one that was raised by Dr. Davey. And so it has to do with the shift that, is happening relative to the minimum threshold for the number of hours of supervised experience. This may be a topic that the committee, sort of wants to spend maybe some time discussing today, but I remind you too that you have the stakeholder meeting coming up on February 17th. And so this may be one of those topics where you decide that's really the opportunity to explore the topic and all of the subtopics underneath with the stakeholders as well. So I'm happy to answer any questions about that. And I apologize for how this material is a little bit dated. We just haven't had a real opportunity, I think, to bring it forward, once the ideas were sort of germinating in your minds.
I think my follow-up question is to the last paragraph with regard to Ms. Galvin providing us some legal advice. Do we have a timeline on that from her? Oh, Ms. Galvin, you were hiding on my screen. I could just ask you that, Ms. Galvin.
Yeah. I can work with Heidi on that. We're just short for attorneys in this section, so we're drowning right now.
So no, that helps us, right? So I think that maybe, you know, if we're in waiting for that, like we can have kind of a preliminary, just like that'll help shape the conversation with the stakeholders in February. We can allude that we're looking at it. Like, I think just knowing that it may still be, you know, 45 to 60 days out before we get some sort of.
Yeah, I would appreciate that.
Yeah. So I think let's just make sure we set that tone with them if that comes up. I mean, I think we want to do this right. And when I brought up my concern, it's not about getting this done fast. It's setting us up for the future, making sure that the statutes and rules align with the fact that, you know, it's something that we recognized early on when we did our rules package, was that as the field matures, that the supervised experience and independent field work practicums, all of those are going to increase in terms of hours. And intensive practicum is going away and changing in many different ways. And so I just want to make sure that we are setting ourselves up for the next, you know, 10, 15 years on this.
And to be fair, I didn't prompt Ms. Galvin that this agenda item was coming back as quickly as it did. So the fact that this was sort of an element of this broader topic eluded me. So I was probably trying to, you know, preserve and protect her sanity, knowing just, you know, having a tiny bit of insight into, you know, really how busy she is. So so it's good to know that this is a topic that, you know, we just we have some time. We just need to make sure that it doesn't, you know, continue to elude us, you know, past the point where, you know, we have problematic language.
I mean, the reality is, it's like, how soon could we even open up to the rules, right? I mean, we're still, you know, we're still a ways out from any sort of ability to even change anything, right, Ms. Packman? Like, we're not coming up on that in the next month or so. So there really, I mean, even if we identify what we wanted to change, we still have to go through a process to make said changes, correct?
Yes. So, I mean, it isn't, with respect to statute changes, we have a bill. The bill has already been, you know, prepared, and, you know, when it will draw, I know it will be introduced. It'll be among those early introductions on or before next Friday, a week from today. So amending that bill would be, you know, possible, but challenging. You know, in terms of promulgating a rule, I think that it only makes sense to move forward, you know, unless there's an emergency of some kind. It only makes sense to sort of, you know, prepare a collection of topics to move a rulemaking forward because of the time involved and the cost involved. So, you know, it's just incumbent upon all of us just to make sure that we're still, you know, we're not caught sleeping on any of these kinds of issues. So, that being said, I know this committee and the board have tried very hard to make sure that your language is accommodating. So whenever, and these are your words, I remember them, whenever the BACB shifts the goalposts, you know, we are able to make the shift along with them.
Yeah. No, I think that's fine. So I think that, you know, we just kind of will let Ms. Galvin get herself unburied, and we can look for her discussion on whether or not we can broadly constitute kind of that discussion on the supervisor piece. I think in terms of the language that we currently have under R-426-401, that supervised experience is not problematic to date. It does require a certain minimum number that is now less than what we'll be seeing as the BAC moves forward. I don't remember the exact date of the VACB's institution of those hours. Was it this year done? Was it 2000 as of now? And yeah, that's going to continue. And there's another. So, I mean, again, and the only, like, you still have to be our language is such that it protects us in that you still have to be a BCBA to seek licensure in the state. And so that is the one saving grace, I think. And again, construction of the language is probably, you know, we'll thank Dr. Bohansky and Dr. Wexler and Dr. Dan Davison for their foresight, hopefully, in crafting some of that with Ms. Galvin. And in the past. Oh gosh, why can't I not think of the nice lady's name that was before Heidi? Jean, what was her name? She was just, we just gave her
Cindy Olley.
Cindy, God, Miss Cindy.
Or so, Jenna Jones was right before Heidi, but
yeah, it was Cindy, I think, that helped us with that language, though, that or helped guide us. Okay. I think that's fine. We can put this on a way, way future agenda item where Miss Galvin can again be surprised when all of a sudden it pops up.
I'm surprised every day.
Okay, so new agenda items for future meetings.
Mr. Chair, if I may, I've already reminded the committee about the special stakeholder meeting, which is racing up on us, at least to me. I think that it's really helpful for the committee to identify the topics that you want on that agenda. I do have, I set aside some time to make sure AZ ABBA, that we get together next week and talk about, you know, what those topics, so they can do whatever preparation they need to do to come to the conversation, you know, informed and, you know, hopefully with data or other information that, you know, sort of helps craft any recommendations or policy changes that may come out of those discussions. The only topic that I can remember that I think you want to talk about is use of titles and title protection for behavior analysts. But beyond that, I'm not sure I have an accounting of everything.
Mr. Chair, if I may, we may want to look at that supervisor form that has the observe the individual once every 2 weeks, just because that's not aligned with the current standards.
Thank you.
So the one you mentioned before that I was packing on, that relates to someone who has let their LBA lapse, still holds BCBA out in their title, and may cause some confusion within the public as to what their credentials are. Correct, that was what you were alluding to there.
Mr. Chair, yes, in part. But it also has a, you know, broader implications, right? I mean, you know, this earlier discussion where an individual maybe they've never been licensed in our state and are practicing. And by virtue of the fact that they're representing who they are and what they can do simply as, you know, BCBA doesn't, you know, alert anyone to the fact as to whether they're licensed or not. So there isn't a specific, you shall use this title if you're licensed, you shall not use this title if you are not licensed type of language in your practice act. So, and it's quite inconsistent too. I mean, as we see sort of how individuals, both licensed and not licensed, how they present, you know, their credentials, their certification, and all of the things that they have acquired, you know, is the public best served by this inconsistency? That's my question. It may not be yours, but it's mine.
Okay, I think that's fair. That can be our, I mean, your questions are our questions, vice versa.
Okay.
And then do we have a list of items that the stakeholder, like the other stakeholders that are AZ ABBA have shared back and forth? Like, is this a shared agenda of topics that we're interested in?
That's something that I can ask AZ ABBA. If the committee wants, you know, AZ ABBA to suggest agenda topics, by all means, you know, give me that direction if you feel that is appropriate. You know, and I can just sort of, just for purposes of facilitating conversation, I think what I've done in the past is just sort of let me know, Jean, if I can still get away with this, list, you know, just a review of the statutes, list a review of the rules. So that opens up all kinds. Oh, she's nodding. Yes. All kinds of possibilities for discussions if, you know, everything is can be on the table.
Okay, that's fair. So we can kind of have an open forum itemized. I would say the other thing that, just given what we've been dealing with, is we probably need to talk about these failures around renewals and what AZIABA and the community can do to get some awareness out there. You know, these are getting painful. I mean, I told the full board last time that we're seeing an increase in these, and I mean, this was quite the increase. So I think if we can get their partnership on that and around address updates, that they've got to realize that these, you know, the path right now, the precedent that we set is we find out, we essentially reinstate your license, so we have jurisdiction, we meet again, we open a complaint, we meet again, we give you a letter of concern. And that's on the, like, that's on the, I did everything right after I found out I screwed up, not that there was anything nefarious. That is a quite a lengthy process for someone who is most likely just, you know, is fairly new in their career. They're renewing, you know, and now all of a sudden they've got this going on top of their job and life. And if we can just get some support out there from the community, I think it's critical.
And I'll ask the question. I know there are some conversations that are very, very early, and you know, they may be more isolated than, you know, so isolated that it's too soon to put the spotlight on them, but conversations around I'll call it considering changes that would make this profession more of a self-regulated profession than the current model, the current regulatory construct. I know conversations have come to, or questions have come to me. So I don't know if they, if it's too soon to, you know, start having some exploration of them or not.
So essentially self-governance, I mean, I think, I don't know, like, I haven't heard anything. I don't attend a lot of the stakeholders meetings. I'm invited to some of them, but I don't make it to them, unfortunately. I have not heard anything in particular to that. So, I mean, we can ask the question, see if they're, what their thoughts are around that. But others, what do you guys think? Or what have you heard?
Similar. I have not heard anything.
Yeah. So maybe we wait instead of just opening that up and see if we are notified or get some concrete. I mean, Dr. Stenhoff, I don't know if you are aware of any conversations.
No, not right now, but it'd be good. I think opening it up and finding out from the AZIABA and the group there would be a good idea.
But that's if it's coming from AZIABA. Do we even know that?
I would not characterize it as, you know, an organization objective or, germinating from that group.
Gotcha. Dr. Davis-Wilson's going to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, you know, the bigger thing to keep in mind, too, is the structure of administrative support and what that looks like in the budget. Because, you know, we're seeing the amount of work having to go into these increased meetings and just the growth of the field, and there's regulations that prevent them from being able to get the support necessary outside of this. So I just want to be cognizant that it may not be a what do our behavior our behavior analysis community stakeholders say, but more of what are the logistics behind ensuring we're not, you know, burning both ends of all resources.
No, that'd be a bigger question for the full psychology board of how do we go after the fact that we have increased the workload of this board and their staff by X amount of now new licensees, whether they're psychologists or behavior analysts, and the ongoing maintenance of those licensees and making kind of the financial proposal to get increased funding. I would think that that would fall kind of on that side of the fence. And I think that, you know, that's probably at the board level, maybe we can have that conversation, Dr. Davis Wilson, and with Heidi's help and her staff's help of like, hey, we're 2.5, or I guess you're, Kathy full time? Okay, so you're 3.5.
She is. So I can envision preparing a lot of data for consideration, you know, for the board and, you know, for anyone who would ask, you know, in terms of how has the agency's fund balance, how is that trending? How are our cost patterns trending? How are, you know, there's a whole lot of metrics to look at. I heard Dr. Davis Wilson mention one, you know, just the workload, which we can quantify by applications, by investigations, and so forth. I don't know that there's a perfect litmus test out there that you apply and you, in doing so, you arrive at this conclusion that, oh, this is a self-sustaining entity. So, but I'm still confident that we can pull a lot of data together to inform those discussions.
I don't even know that at what point is it self-sustaining? It's more of like, do the people that are supporting us today have the resources they need? You know, it's like, do you need another person to take care of us and help shepherd the things that we're bringing to the table that are, you know, directly related in a lot of ways to what psychologists are dealing with, but we don't have a structure that's quite as mature as theirs. We don't have, you know, a complaint screening committee. We don't have different facets set up that, you know, at some point we're going to get to that. And need support around those things. And given the numbers of meetings that your team and Ms. Galvin attend, you know, imagine another layer of that, just not really probably possible given the current staffing model. So it may be, and it's not like we don't have the finances. I mean, again, we can have this at the board level discussion. Like, we have the finances. The question is, can we get approval for an FTE from whoever we need to? And perhaps the new administration will be open to that. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Anything else, Dr. Davey? Okay. Any further suggestions? Okay. All right. Let's move on to agenda item number 15. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
I moved.
I'll second.
All right. Any discussion? All right. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. Motion carries. We're adjourned.